With America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A minute past the hour, and welcome, welcome, welcome to the Friday edition of Head On. I am, of course, Bob Kincaid, for the uninitiated. Of which there are many, many, many growing every day, including some right-wing nuts. I've had several inquiries over the course of the day as to whether we've heard anything from Matt. You'll recall that Matt tried to, using apparently his toes, type a blog post at headonradionetwork.com. And, you know, I was really quite gentle with Matt last night. I didn't say half the mean, ugly stuff that I could have. I didn't even remind Matt that it's liberals and progressives who are trying to save his rotten, worthless, conservative life by ending the conflict in Iraq. But no, we haven't heard anything from Matt, and we won't, because Matt is a conservative. And by definition, conservatives are cowards. So don't look to hear from Matt, although he's welcome to call in. And you know what? I'm not mean or rude to anybody, ever. At least until such time as they start being mean and rude to me. I'm looking for the conversation. I'm looking for the dialogue. I'm looking to a return to real bottom, from the bottom up problem solving here in the United States of America, before we screw up and take the world with us. So, you know, Matt, if you're out there, feel free. But right now, it being Friday and everything, well, if it's Friday, it must be time to travel north and somewhat west to the, I hope, not nearly so wintry land of Chicago, and Carolyn Kay from MakeThemAccountable.com. Caro, is it getting any better there?
Hi, Bob. It's a beautiful day this afternoon, although I had to walk the dog briefly. Usually my significant other does the dog walking part, but I had to take the dog out just for a few minutes first thing this morning, and it was sleeting. It snowed yesterday, and it was sleeting this morning, but today all that seems to have passed on through. It's a beautiful day. It's crisp. It's still fairly chilly, but we're used to not having a spring anyway. Usually it's May 31st cold, June 1st hot.
Yeah, well, I remember the late great humor columnist Louis Grizzard, who was a little more right wing for my taste, but he was a dandy writer, and he was with Sports Illustrated in Chicago for a few years, and he said that Chicago has two seasons.
That's right.
Dead of winter and 4th of July.
Well, other people say there's winter and there's road construction.
Well, I'm not sure which one I'd rather have in that instance, but April is not far away, and things will come back to life. So, yeah.
And yes. I'm pretty sure that there will be some flowers poking their heads out pretty soon.
And, of course, that seminal indication of the arrival of spring, the Cubbies and the White Sox will start playing baseball again soon.
I guess so, but I got to tell you, baseball leaves me cold. In fact, all sports leave me cold.
But you had to love the story about the first pitch at the Washington Nationals Park. You did catch that, didn't you, Kara?
No. Mm-mm.
Well, you remember the Mitchell report that sort of dropped the dime on a whole lot of juiced-up ballplayers?
Yes.
And we had some really stupid, worthless hearings in Congress about it?
Yes. In the midst of Iraq War, as soldiers were dying on the battlefield,
Right. And while the soldiers were dying on the battlefield and people were getting blown up and civilians were getting slaughtered and bombs were going off in markets and mosques across Iraq, and women are being still beaten and tormented in Afghanistan, George W. Bush took time out from his busy day, Caro, back when this broke, to opine against the use of performance-enhancing drugs in our national pastime.
Well, he knows what's important.
Well, sure he does. And so, one of the names that keeps popping up, or popped up repeatedly in the Mitchell report, was that of a fellow who plays catcher for the Washington Nationals, a guy by the name of Loduca.
Mm-hmm.
And, when you're throwing out the first pitch at on opening day, as the president does, at, the Washington Nationals Park, obviously you throw the first pitch out, usually, to the starting catcher. And that would be Paul Loduca, who was apparently, according to the Mitchell report, just juiced to the gills. And because they don't want dear leader I love it, they don't want him getting any more embarrassed than he already is, I guess is how you'd put it.
Is it possible?
One wonders. The mind boggles. But Paul Loduca has been replaced. George Bush will not be throwing the first pitch to Paul Loduca.
Oh, thank God. Oh, I was so worried about that. It's been one of my major concerns.
Well, we can't have the first cokehead throwing out the first pitch to the first steroid head.
No, of course we can't. That would be embarrassing.
One wonders for whom.
Oh, what a crazy world we live in.
It is. It is. And it goes on and on and on. Have you followed this story about the 22-year-old dude and his $300 million arms contract?
Yes. Tremendously, but I did read some things, amazing things about it, yes.
It took me a couple of weeks to get over Jeff Gannongate. Because, my mind was just whirling and spinning. But this one's even worse. I mean, at least with Jeff Gannongate, you had the idea that somebody was giving Jeff Gannon access because they were wanting to get a little something-something.
Well, and all he did was help Bush lie to the American people. This guy, I don't even know his name, this guy stole millions of dollars from our treasury.
Hundreds of millions. It's amazing. And of course, it turns out, because we spent considerable time on this last night, I thought poor little Mark Levine's head was just going to pop right off when he found out about it. It just about destroyed John Fox, and it didn't do much good for me either.
What I want to know is, how do you get these gigs? I mean, this guy doesn't even seem to have been connected, like he isn't the son of Trent Lott or something like that that would give him an automatic in. I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah, 22 years old with a Craigslist listing, and that gets you the in at the Pentagon?
Well, I do happen to know because of the fact that I was toying with the idea of working with somebody to put together a proposal for a not strictly Pentagon, but Pentagon-related computer software project, and did do a little bit of digging into what has to be done. And what you do is you have to fill out a form online. There's a central place for all government contractors to go and, you know, fill in their information and all of that. Now, supposedly, there would be some vetting of that information before you're handed a contract for $300 million, okay, presumably. But apparently, in the case of this guy, no vetting was done. I'm sure we'll find out more as the weeks go by.
Well, yeah, and it looks like nobody's going to be hearing from Dude anytime soon, Caro, because he's not within the territorial confines of the United States.
What a surprise!
He's busy. He's like doing his hair or something. he's feeding the dog. He's walking the dog in Turkey. but they did manage to get hold of his dad and his grandpa.
Uh-huh.
And Angelo Divaroli, who is Ephraim's grandfather, Ephraim Divaroli is Dude. He told CNN affiliate WPLG-TV that his grandson is being targeted by jealous competitors in the international arms market. You have no idea what a challenge it is. All the other 22-year-old slacker arms dealers out there.
Oh my!
His granddaddy said he's a genius about anything to do with weapons. Ever since he was a little boy, I would take him to gun shows, and he could identify every model of guns.
And there you go. Therefore, he's experienced enough to buy arms for military. I think that
because he's been to redneck gun shows. Sure,
that settles it.
And people would ask, "How can he do that so young?" He has a gift, I would tell them.
Oh no!
He also said that his grandson is off in Turkey,
doing his patriotic duty,
buying weapons.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. On the other hand, his dad was a little less verbose. He said, I would prefer he became a nice Jewish doctor or lawyer rather than an arms dealer.
Oh. Well, he's in good company.
I mean, really, this is... he's the poster child of the Iraq War, isn't he? It's
yes.
No longer Lindy England.
Didn't they do that with... in another context, yeah. But didn't they do that with that whole crew that went over to Iraq in that first year? They took people that were ideologically pure, but they were all like 22 years old, just out of college, had never had any experience running agencies or doing any of the administrative things that needed to be done. And somehow, entire flats of dollars, greenback dollars sitting on pallets, disappeared.
$9 billion of them.
Yes, $9 billion of them.
And we just don't know where they went.
We have no idea. We just got handed that out.
You know, I could feel a little better about the Ephraim Divaroli thing, though, Caro, if he'd actually bought anything that was... Because, see, this was a contract to supply... arms and ammunition to the Afghan police and the Afghan army, not our guys.
Right.
And he went running around the East Bloc and wound up buying Chinese-made ammunition from rotting in rotting boxes that was 40 years old.
Well, a significant other said he worked with explosives years ago. He was a chemist and worked with explosives, and he said, there is nothing more dangerous than ammunition that is that old. it just can ignite and blow everything up, you know. It gets more powerful and less stable as the years go by. And very dangerous.
Yes, it is. And, you know, it's dangerous for who? For people either on the front end, in front of, or behind the weapon that's firing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. You never know what it's going to do, so you don't know who's going to get hurt. You have no idea.
This is astonishing. I'm sure they'll have some congressional hearings. They've kind of got to, don't they?
Did you see the Tom Tolles cartoon the other day? He's one of my favorite cartoonists for the Washington Post. And recently he did one that was the monument for the Bush administration, and it was chiseled out the word "so" with a question mark. And Bush is talking to Cheney, and he said, or to whoever, to Karl Rove, I guess. He said, it took a long, long time to figure out how to encapsulate this administration in one word.
Yeah, God. It's going to be, it's a long way to November, Caro.
Oh, and I'm just so afraid we're going to get another one like him. So, we'll just have to work real hard to make that not happen.
I hope so. I hope so. We're still seeing this stuff out there, and these people having hissies over the primary process. If we're going to have a hissy over the primary process, why bother to have a primary process, Caro?
Well, yeah.
If you want a coronation, let's set it up like the Republicans and have done with it.
And just make it that way. Yeah. I think people don't like uncertainty, you know, and I understand that. I understand that they don't like it, but we have to learn to deal with that. It reminds me a lot of what's going on now, and this impatience and this get it over with, get the decision made, you know, it's very much like the process right after the election in 2000 when Gore was challenging the coronation, and all of the news media, when is this going to be over? I mean, honestly, that was the intonation used by people in the media as though they were in pain because of this uncertainty, because of this difficult situation going on where actual democracy was taking place.
And that really is it at the end of the day, isn't it, Caro?
Yeah,
the so-called professional media can't stand the idea that people actually have a real, live, honest-to-God opinion and want to voice it in the ballot, in the voting booth.
Yeah, well, that's what Democrat ought to be about.
Demo. Crossy, yeah, Greek words. Think it means interminable 18-month period of abject misery. No, maybe not. But now John McCain is out there, and he can't seem to quite make up his mind. Have you noticed that he's not? He told Judas Stephanopoulos that he wasn't absolutely no new taxes. Can you envision a situation in which you would raise taxes? No. That's McCain. No. Well, it's all changed now. And he said, he's told the Wall Street Journal that I'm not making it a centerpiece of my campaign. No new taxes. It's been back and forth as to who on the Democratic side is getting the kid gloves from the media. Obama, why won't they? Hillary. The guy that's getting the kid glove treatment is the crazy old bald fart who wants to have a 100-year war.
Yes, yes, absolutely, no question about it. He says things like, Iran is arming the Al Qaeda when Iran is a Shiite country and Al Qaeda are Sunnis from Saudi Arabia, and he's said it several times. Okay, so. Somehow he's got this in his mind. He is trying to stop the Bush line against Iran to, hopefully get a war going there too. You know, these people just want war. And McCain has bought into it because he wants to be president. So So he will go along with whatever Bush wants and has for the last 3 years or so. So how that makes him a maverick, I do not know. But he has been exactly in the Bush pocket.
It's kind of a gelded maverick, isn't he?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So,
and so, but the media don't call him on this. If, but I did read something today that kind of scared me that said, you know, with him in that mode of thinking, you know, even if it's a mistake, Iran is arming al-Qaeda in Iraq, he's thinking war with Iran. He's wanting war with Iran.
He aches for it. He gets on his bony old knees every night and prays for it, Tara.
Yeah.
I mean, really. You know, you've got... I mean, my God, what was it? Dick Cheney went to visit the king of Saudi Arabia, and afterward, the Saudi Arabian and the entire Saudi Arabian governmental infrastructure starts putting in place plans for dealing with the effects of a nuclear strike.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you noticed. I know you noticed that.
Yeah. But of course, Cheney is Mr. Doomsday. When Hillary called him Darth Vader. That was the perfect analogy because Cheney is, and this it tends to be conservatives. Conservatives tend to be more afraid of the world, so to speak, than liberals are. Afraid of people, afraid of the world, you know. And but Cheney takes that to the absolute nth degree. Now, whether he actually believes this or not, I don't know. Whether he uses it as a tactic to scare people and manipulate them only, I don't know. But people who knew him when he was younger say that they don't know the Dick Cheney of today. They don't recognize him. But I could imagine him going over to Saudi Arabia and saying, you're going to be attacked. You're going to be attacked tomorrow. We have proof, definitive proof from some guy named Curveball who's an alcoholic.
Yeah, don't blame me. I was drunk at the time. What's George Bush's excuse?
So, you know, he could put the fear of God into people. I have no doubt.
Well, look, it's, I mean, is there, do you talk, are you still, I know you've talked in the past, Caro, about the fact that, you know, when you built Make Them Accountable, it was in part a response to the shouting down that you constantly saw by, you know, sort of drive-by conservatives on message boards and things like that.
Right.
Are they still out there in the same numbers?
Well, not on the conservative side. At least they're not pushing stuff at me, although now and then I'm getting some stuff on Obama from some of those same people that were corresponding with me back then and kind of over the years. They gear up around election times and things like that. And they have all the lies, you know, about him being a Muslim and... you know, about his relatives in Kenya being dangerous and all this stuff, all lies, you know, but they're out there, they're prepping, they're getting ready, you know, so.
Well, and I've pointed some of that out because I follow the right-wing religion industry pretty closely. And, you know, in the last week they've declared that Obama's father wasn't really black.
What?
No, you didn't hear this?
No.
Yeah, they've declared that he's actually an Arab.
An Arab born in Kenya?
One of those Kenyans.
Barack Obama?
Yeah, one of those Kenyan Arabs. they've also they're also all up in arms because he declared that Muslims and Jews are children of God. Yeah, I know, the nerve. The nerve, I tell you.
Well, you know, I used to wrestle with that when I was a Catholic about, you know, gee, do babies really go to hell if they haven't been baptized? Before I gave up on all that stuff.
No, but it's coming. It's coming.
I know.
And the sleaze piece that I ran across that put me onto this was authored, and you'll recognize this name, Kara, was authored by a guy by the name of Jerome Corsi.
No, I don't know that name.
He's the father of the Swift boat.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
And he declared in no uncertain terms at the top of the piece, despite the stories that Barack Obama tells in his book, Dreams from My Father, it's not the truth. Barack Obama's father was a polygamist and an alcoholic.
They're starting. Yeah.
And see, the thing is, they're a little bit behind the curve with Senator Obama because they've had since 1992 to build the machine for sleazing and sliming Hillary.
Right. And that's been one of my points in terms of deciding myself to support Hillary is that, you know, when they try to bring out the same old junk about her having murdered, having had an affair with Vince Foster and having murdered Vince Foster and having,
don't forget Travelgate.
Drug smuggling through MENA, Arkansas and all this stuff.
Don't forget the hidden files in the panty drawer.
Oh, the hidden files. Yeah. But, you know, and the Whitewater mess all over again. You know, people are bound to go either yawn or run screaming from the room, saying, don't tell me, I don't want to hear any more of this, you know. Whereas there's fertile ground there with Obama. There are lots and lots of lies to make up about stuff. So it's going to be interesting either way. That's what I say.
Well, I think it will. And the sooner, I'm not going to say that because that would sort of violate my own personal feelings about primary processes.
You know, you can't help but want some sort of clarity on what's going on.
Well, I want what drives me a little bit nuts, Caro, is the fact that John McCain's out here running unopposed and not spending a penny and violating the Federal Election Commission campaign laws left and right and not getting called on it.
But I don't think that would be different if we didn't still have a primary going on. The thing that I keep thinking about in terms of this primary is what Walter Shapiro wrote in Salon a couple of weeks ago. He said, we have never had this much interest in politics in his lifetime, certainly in my lifetime either, you know, really. Even, you know, Bobby Kennedy's run was so short. And I was not involved in the McGovern thing, but that was, you know, that was really too short too, you know. We have not had this much interest in the political process certainly in a very long time, perhaps in my lifetime. And I think that's a good thing.
there was a pretty nice field in 76, wasn't there?
That was the year that who ran?
That was Carter and Muskie and Kennedy and several others whose names don't come right immediately to the tip of my tongue.
No, you see, I was not very political at that time, and it just sort of to me.
Yeah, I was kind of 13 at the time. I just seem to recall.
I was old enough to vote at the time, but it didn't interest me a lot.
But you mentioned Bobby Kennedy. There's something out there that I haven't seen a lot of mention of. That just sort of struck me as at least suitable for some, interest. This headline, experts, Sirhan Sirhan did not kill RFK.
Yeah, well, it comes from came through the BBC, and I just caught the headline myself. I don't know the particulars of what they found and what they're reporting and so on, but it's another one of those things where I go, oh, no, not another conspiracy theory.
Well, this doesn't look like that, though.
Really?
Yeah, these are forensic experts, and, you know, analysis, the typical stuff. You analyze what you have, the only audio recording, that kind of thing. Based on the audio recording, one scientist has said that at least 13 shots were fired from two different guns. And another guy says that there has to be more than one shooter based on his forensic analysis, and that the shots fired by the second shooter match the firearm a security guard behind Bobby Kennedy carried.
Hmm.
Fascinating stuff. from a seminar, I guess, that was last weekend.
Well, it is true that we have a lot more tools available to us nowadays, a lot better technology for determining some of those things. And at the time, we have to remember that everybody was so freaked out that it would have been hard even for the people that are supposed to be cool in a crisis, you know, to have been at their best in investigating that situation.
Probably the single most interesting piece of information to come out of it is the conclusion that the fatal shots came from behind Bobby Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
When Sirhan Sirhan was 4 to 6, you know, he was in front of him.
You would think they would have known that from the autopsy. I don't know that I've ever heard whether Sirhan said he did not kill Kennedy. Do you know?
I think he's like James Earl Ray. I think he has maintained at least some degree of his innocence.
Really?
And you know that there was the story that came out what year and a half, 2 years ago that sort of went right by the boards and nobody paid any attention to it. To the effect that there were one of the Vietnam CIA station chiefs just happened to be in the room that night and had no reason to be. I don't want to dig it up again either. But you know we've got some creepy stuff in our past that does bear at least
absolutely
acknowledging.
There's no question about it that some very seriously bad and wrong things have been done in this country, and some of it by the government, you know. And I have to say that in that instance, Reverend Wright had some right, you know, in some of the things that he was saying. I'm just not sure that his method of going about it is the best way to.
Well, Reverend Wright's not going to play with a white bread audience.
Yeah, well, yeah, of course. But even with the black community, I wonder if that is the best way to, how shall I say it, to affect change. You know, personally, as you know, I don't think Obama is the person to do it either. Because I think he's too milquetoast and wishy-washy. He's never really stood up for anything. But I don't think this firebrand way of doing it, the which is similar to the Jesse Jackson approach and so on, Al Sharpton approach. I don't think that is the way to do it either. I can't say that I know what the answer is. Here I am, just an ordinary citizen here, trying to halfway figure some things out.
Well, one of the things about the Reverend Wright affair, if you will. Is that, you know, you heard a lot about what he said, but you heard very little about when he said it. For instance, the AIDS comment that seemed to draw a great deal of attention was made in 1992 or 1993, a time when HIV was still burning up America,
mm-hmm.
and in which the shorthand of the pulpit, you know. I think I wouldn't say it that way either, Kara. But you know what? We cannot begin to count the number of people who died needlessly while the Reagan administration sat on its hands and let its pal Jerry Falwell wander around the country calling it a gay plague.
Oh, you for AIDS? Oh, yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. And so, you know, if a preacher in 1992 or 1993 says that the government has deliberately targeted the black community with HIV, I can at least rationalize my way into that.
Right.
I don't have I don't think it's a matter of, you know, people running around and, you know, just injecting people with the virus, but you know, ignorance is toxic. And by not, you know, by ignoring it the way the Reagan administration did, how many people did wind up dying of that disease because the government was silent when it needed to be screaming from the housetops? You know what I mean?
I'm sure of many thousands.
So, you know, it's worth remembering when that was said. But on another note, just moving back to Darth Cheney for a minute. the reason that I asked you earlier, you know, if you were still seeing the same hopping up and down, flapping their little bat wings, you know, crazy people, is there any difference between what Cheney said this week in Beirut and what they were saying about Iraq and the yellow cake? I mean, substantially, is there any difference?
I'm not familiar with what Cheney said.
Well, just obviously they're also heavily involved in trying to develop nuclear weapons enrichment.
Iran?
This is about Iran.
Is there any difference between their attempt to go to war in Iran and the way they went to war in Iraq? No. No, none at all.
And so we have to ask fundamental questions about the learning curve of the American people, don't we?
You have to ask fundamental questions about how stupid does he think we are? And then, of course, we have to wonder about how stupid we really are, sadly.
But, I mean, seriously, does...
But here's the thing that's going on, and this is the thing that really, really worries me, is that every single function of government is going to be used to keep keep the Bush administration going with John McCain at its head. John McCain, the new Bush. And I just wish people really were thinking about that and had that in the forefront of their brains. You know, we've seen it with the Justice Department. And by the way, your buddy Don Siegelman has been given a bond so that he can stay out of jail.
And go testify in Congress, maybe?
And he's going to testify in Congress. And, you know, I think John Conyers' investigation, honestly, was the thing that helped the judge make up his mind. You know, I really think that.
Well, this was the ninth U.S. Judicial Circuit Court of Appeals sitting in Atlanta. So you got to figure there was more than one judge involved. But I agree. I think it was John Conyers that sort of pushed that a little bit. Do you think Karl Rove feels any heat under the soles of his feet right now?
I don't know. I have no idea what that meant. You know, if I were he, I would be scared to death. My butt was going to go to prison, okay, for all of the things that he did that, involved, that broke laws to keep Republicans in power, put more Republicans in power, to buy positions and this and that and the other thing. I mean, there just have been so many instances of true wrongdoing. By all rights, Karl Rove, George Bush, and Dick Cheney, among others, ought to go to prison. But whether he actually fears that or not, I have no idea. I really have no idea.
I just wonder if he thinks that he's gotten so many things put in place that nobody can possibly reach him. But, you know, it would not be as difficult to get an indictment, and I mean in terms of the tenor of the country and the way they feel about it. It wouldn't be the challenge to get a criminal charge against Karl Rove that it would be to get one against George Bush or Dick Cheney, do you think?
Well, you would have to find a prosecutor that was willing to do that. And right now, they're all Republicans. Prosecutors, and the Democrats have never shown that they have enough gumption to do something like that.
What I loved was the unequivocal way in which the Circuit Court of Appeals said he's not a flight risk. There was a second standard, and I can't remember what that was, but the third standard was, and he has shown that he has a substantial likelihood of prevailing in his appeal on either law or fact.
Yeah. You know, that Atlanta Court of Appeals is not as conservative as you might think.
Well, it's got some Clinton appointees on it, frankly.
Okay.
And
I did not know that, but I know that the few times I've heard of a decision of theirs, I have tended to agree with them.
They're certainly not the gang of goose-stepping fascists that the Fourth is, and I live in the Fourth Circuit.
In the Washington area, Washington, D.C. area. God, Those are all political hacks.
Oh,
but,
they,
one thing that impressed me about the Atlanta federal court is that they turned down the Bush v. Gore petition. They said this is a state issue. This is not us.
And that's that true. I'd forgotten about that. That's absolutely
that was
true.
When I had hope that it would be turned down by the Supreme Court, and that the state of Florida would be allowed to just count the damn vote, you know, and there was a very good judge in charge of that.
Speaking of counting the damn votes, is it all over till June and the credentials committee meeting is for Michigan and Florida?
Ask. Strange that you should ask. Karl Rove has suggested a compromise.
You're kidding.
Democrats. No, I'm not kidding. I am not kidding. You know, Kagan Goddard, who does Political Wire.
Right, right.
And he also has a column, Political Insider, at CQ Politics. He says that in an appearance on Fox News, being a political pundit for Fox News, Karl Rove said, Senator Barack Obama might deal with the problem of seating delegates from Florida and Michigan and win the Democratic nomination at the same time. Rove suggested that by agreeing to seat the delegates according to the results of the, quote, illegal, close quote, January primaries, even if that would give a slight advantage to Senator Hillary Clinton, Obama could actually persuade a majority of the remaining superdelegates to back him. It would show Democratic leaders that he's willing to put the party's interests above his own. It would show confidence in his own ability as a leader. And perhaps more importantly, it would be a gesture that Clinton could not match.
Why does Karl Rove care?
He probably doesn't, unless, you know, he's now working with McCain. I think he's been working with McCain all along. But he has an interest in which candidate McCain faces. And I've never been able to figure out which one he preferred. I always thought it was Obama, but then, you know, the picture got clouded there for a while, and, you know, I'm at the point where I don't know which people on the right are supporting whom, but a lot of the right-wingers have been very critical of Obama for the last month or 6 weeks, and so that makes me wonder if it really isn't Clinton that they want to face or whatever. But you just can't. I mean, what's a head fake? What's a double head fake? What's a triple head fake?
Right.
I don't know.
That's the down and in with the juke to the sideline before you run the post pattern. Yeah, I know.
Right.
You know, I've got an email here, Caro, saying that Rove on the hot seat, not at all. Richard Addington has already filed a memo with Cheney to give to Bush that the president can give a blanket pardon before any crime is pointed out. Well, you know, did Richard Addington necessarily even need to do that? That's the precedent from Ford's pardon of Richard Nixon, isn't it?
Well, and it's also the precedent of his own father, who pardoned a lot of Iran-Contra folks just before he left office. People who could have put him in jail.
Right. Casper Weinberger, for one.
That's right.
I remember old Cap, and Admiral Poindexter.
Yes.
Didn't he get the walk, too?
Yes. And, of course, our good friend, the captain, who's now on talk radio.
You mean Colonel North.
Oliver North. Of course, I don't know that he got a pardon because his conviction was overturned.
His conviction was fixed in the appeals court.
Some fixed judge or something, you know. Was it Silverman or somebody like that that just has always been in the pocket of the right wing?
I don't know if somebody's actually here, but I think we may have a caller here, Caro. Stand by just a second. Hi, who we got? Hello? Oh, well. We've been having a few of them.
That was a very interesting question.
Wasn't it? It was absolutely scintillating. But this is, like I said, long way to November. I'd like for it to hurry up and get here. I'm really looking forward to the idea of the horn being at the Democratic National Convention in August.
Yeah, that's great.
Oh, God, to be there and watch all of this stuff go down. Oh, yeah. Because, again, what you said, I don't think there's been this much interest in a process, perhaps in my lifetime or yours.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I'm trying to sit back, take a breath, relax a little bit, and not let this get under my skin quite so much.
What I try to do as best I can, and this is, I started this when I first began to get involved in 2000, was I would get so angry, at the lies that the media would put up with about George Bush and help him tell, and then they just made up stuff about Al Gore. And so I would get angry and angry, and I finally said, look, if I'm going to stick with this, I cannot do that. I have to learn to handle it in a different way.
Yeah, otherwise you become a member of the Ulcer of the Week Club.
Yeah. It's not good for you all over. It's not good for your heart. I mean, stress causes heart attacks, period, So you've got to figure out ways to handle that kind of stress in your daily life. And what I decided to do was to, when I started to feel the boiling of the blood, that I would say, now wait. What can I learn from this? I put myself in learning mode and say, now, this is a strategy, and this is how they do that, and what would be a good way to counter that, or to turn it around, or to make it slightly veer off course, or, what are my alternatives here, and to think in those terms as opposed to, that stupid idiot said blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, I've been pretty successful in keeping my blood pressure down. Whether I've learned that much, I don't know. I hope that I have, but
it's going to get a little warmer as we get closer to November, and we all know that. And I believe in keeping the powder dry. I hated that phrase when it was used by, the likes of Harry Reid, but in this case I really do think it matters. In your digest that went out today, you've got a headline there that says, another philosophy lecture from the Washington Post.
And we can all learn from the Washington Post.
Oh, gosh, can't we? Maybe I could do a show demeaning women like the Washington Post did. I mean, even I'm not that dumb.
There's another one coming tomorrow. I would just wait. Another stupid thing from Washington. But go ahead.
No, there is?
Yeah. I mean,
or are you just speculating?
You'll see it tomorrow.
Oh, don't make us wait.
So what is...
No, just this... I love this... what we were talking about earlier with this business of, the press giving a pass to John McCain.
Yeah, right.
This, of course, it's a link from the American Prospect. He's complaining that about this quote from the Post, the argument over the housing crisis illustrates broader differences in economic philosophy between McCain and his Democratic rivals. No, on taxes, McCain has reversed his opposition to President Bush's 2001 tax plan and now supports making the cuts permanent.
Some people call that a flip-flop.
Lord God.
But they won't call it that because he's the Republican. He's the guy they like. He's the guy they want.
Why do they? Explain that to me, please, Carol.
Well,
why do they want him?
They want George Bush, for God's sake. It has to do with their maximization of their own personal income and the maximization of their company's profits. That's what it has to do with. And they think Republicans are the best for that.
That escapes me. Because, print media is going down the toilet under George Bush.
Don't bring reality into this.
Yeah, I know. Ugly habit of mine.
Haven't you read enough Bob Summerby to know? Do you read Bob Summerby?
Oh, yeah, the Daily Howler.
I quote him periodically because he's so funny. He was Al Gore's roommate, by the way. Did you know that? His roommate in college.
Yes, I did.
And this... They have this storyline going, and they've got to defend that storyline no matter what the evidence is against it. It's just the way they've got to do things.
But if
you get the world would come to an end or something.
You've always got a specific section of your digest that's stuff for media matters.
Right.
And if you go there, the curtain gets pulled away, the rubber mask gets pulled off, and Toto bites the guy who's pulling the levers in the closet. One of the things, AP uncritically quoted McCain claim that Obama will raise taxes on homeowners.
And they do it over and over and over and over again.
And it just makes you speechless because where's the evidence? I mean, do we get any evidence along? Or do you just,
no.
Does he just get to
no.
say crazy crap
it's
in the press?
It's what somebody else in the Beltway culture said. So everybody else in the Beltway culture says that. And that original person is the one they base it. I mean, this is the way all of these myths get perpetrated.
I mean, you've got again the Washington Post calling McCain a champion of campaign finance reform when this guy is out there with his tap shoes on dancing on the FEC
right now.
Yeah, it just blows me away. The New York Times decided that and see, bear in mind, at least this is my own little personal conspiracy theory. Whoever was the flavor of the moment would have gotten this label. But, you know, Barack Obama is the most liberal member of the United States Senate. Huh?
That was put out by the National Journal.
Oh, was that National Journal? I thought it was New York Times. But...
No, well, National Journal was the original source of that. Now, New York Times may have repeated it. I don't know. But remember when John Kerry was the most liberal senator?
Yeah, that's my point. I mean, wouldn't the most liberal member of the United States Senate have put his foot down and filibustered further funding for the Iraq war, whether it was Senator Clinton or Senator Obama? Isn't that what the most liberal senator would have done? On the stimulus package, wouldn't the most liberal senator have said, listen, we're going to pour some money into extending unemployment benefits? I mean, isn't that what a liberal would have...
Might have.
At what point in time... Oh, sorry. See, we're back to it again.
The question is, you know, when to reevaluate. You reevaluate when facts filter through your brain, you know, filter through whatever the the barrier is between you and the world, to say, oh, you know, it's like 3 or 4 years ago, Rince Crane, who is the scion of the Crane family, Crane's Chicago business.
Right.
Business, et cetera, et cetera, Ad Age, you know. He wrote a column saying, based on something that, it was a study done by somebody and the Los Angeles Times reported on it, that if you go back in history, you know, everybody says the Republicans are better for the economy. But if you go back and look at the numbers, that is not true. In the last 100 years, the economy has done better by every single measure under Democratic presidents than under Republican presidents, okay?
So how do they get traction with this garbage?
So Rand Crane read that, and he said, maybe we have to rethink this thing about Republicans being better for the economy. Well, where did that go? Nowhere.
Beep,
it's the respective
beep,
business publications
beep,
saying,
yeah.
We need to rethink this, but you still hear it over and over and over again from all the pundits. Well, Republicans are better for the economy. You know that. That's true. It's fact. Because they only talk to each other. They only reinforce each other. They never listen to anybody outside their little, you know, super culture that they've got going there. And I'm talking about the Beltway media.
Yeah.
And many of the New York media who are in there with him.
And does anybody do a better job of pointing that out than Tom Tomorrow?
Tom Tomorrow does great. Media Matters for America does great. And the thing about Media Matters, when I finally decided to start posting their headlines, I used to pick out the most the worst stories and post one or two excerpts, you know. But then I said, you know, there's got to be a better drip, drip, drip than that, you know. So I said, okay, I'm just going to post all their headlines every day. So if you just read through those headlines every day, you would go, why in the world would I ever read the Washington Post or the New York Times or the Associated Press or any of those people? Why would I watch MSNBC or...
Yeah, why not just have done with it and read the Weekly World News online and, you know, then you're done for the day.
And that's it.
You know, Alien meets with John McCain. Sure, why not? I mean, I love this. I love this line from the Tom Tomorrow cartoon that you posted in your email today. You know, the Penguin. I love the Penguin.
Yeah, the Penguin.
Honestly, I don't understand why people think the candidate they prefer should be treated with blind adulation. They're not messiahs. They're job applicants. And it's our responsibility as citizens to look seriously at their strengths and their flaws. And the little conservative dude, my candidate has no flaws. My God, it's going to be a long year.
I know.
So,
it's very sad when people can't look at things from a realistic perspective. You know, there's absolutely no reason in the world why we have to have blind allegiance to anybody or anything. You know, some people feel they have to have that in their religion. Okay, fine. But we don't have to have it in our political life. We don't have to have it in our personal lives either. You know, why would I have blind allegiance to some other human being? Heck no. I realize the faults of my significant other.
Yeah, I'm
point them out consistently.
See, I'm so far out there, I've kind of given up the whole worship thing all the way around.
Well, and of course, it makes no sense to throw oneself blindly at anything. Of course, I used to wish I had that capability because I thought, gee, it would be so nice to just let it go, you know, just believe in whatever, something. I didn't even care what it was. Just believe in something so wholeheartedly that I never had to think about it, you know. But I guess I'm just not made that way because I'll start reading something and go through and say, okay, just don't do this one. Oh, wait a minute.
hey, I was doing fine for a minute. No. and by the way, you know, we usually wrap up with a couple of just, you know, little media pieces. It is kind of interesting to know that Ed the Mushroom Head Schultz has been dumped in Miami.
Yeah, yeah.
So what, Miami listeners are sick of listening to 3 hours a day of nothing but hate Hillary? I mean,
I don't know if it's that. Well, you have to think that, you know, Miami having such a large Latino population and Latinos going for Hillary, you would think. But I don't know.
It's interesting that they dumped him. You know, they didn't dump him for, you know, Music of Your Life. They dumped him for Tom Hartman.
For Tom Hartman, who is much more reasonable. You know, Tom is one of those people that has so much knowledge and so much learning, and he can spout things off off the top of his head for just, you know, minutes at a time on just any subject that you bring up, and if there's something that he doesn't know or doesn't quite remember. He says, you know, I'm not sure I remember correctly or whatever, and he'll want to go back and research it again before he says anything. But he's never, the only thing he rants about are injustices. He cannot stand injustice. Like me, that is the thing that gets to me the most is injustice in this world. I can't stand it. I guess if you experience.
You mean like when little girls die at home because their parents decided to pray over them instead of taking them to the doctor?
Oh.
Two of those stories in 1 week, Caro.
Yes, I know. You know, it's one thing for an adult to make that decision, but it's just not right for people to make those decisions about their children. It's not right. But
yeah, well, see that's another thing the Republicans have done to us. Once upon a time, there was a concept in this country that when parents are screwing up, or when parents send their children to school, that the state stands in a Latin phrase in loco parentis.
But think about this now: the things that officials can step in about have to do with sexual behavior or something or drugs or, you know, whatever's a big no-no to the right wingers, okay, then.
No, we need tough legislation.
Yeah, right. We need to stop people from doing that, you know.
I mean, there's an open question as to whether those parents in Oregon will be charged with a crime.
Yeah.
Even so much as child neglect.
In my mind, they should be.
Yeah, and involuntary sterilization for the both of them, thank you very much. But, you know, I'm just mean that way. But if you talk about things like that, about the government getting, you know, we the people getting serious about taking care of, you know, our living children, the ones outside of the womb, then you're going to hear some Republican holler, nanny state.
Well, you know, I think we ought to stop listening to those people myself.
No, well, I do too. But I don't think you and I are the problem, Carol.
No, but there has been a concerted effort by the religious right wing and the financial right wing to mold the minds of Americans. You may have noticed that I also published something today on another piece on the altruism and compassion thing that proves, you know, we really have a built-in capability to counter our selfishness, which we would have to have in order to be able to live together in groups, okay? You can't just have everybody off on their own damn thing and, you know, never wanting to coordinate anything. I got mine. But that is the kind of society that right-wingers promote. And just to let you know, more suicides are committed under conservative governments in Australia, in England, and in the United States because of those very things that we want people, that, you know, conservatives want people to stand alone, pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. Nobody helps you.
Yeah, never mind that we're taking the boots away.
I got the boots. You get the straps. Now, pull yourself up by your bootstraps.
A rising tide lifts all boats.
And a trickle-down economy.
Well, the problem with that rising tide lifting all the boats is what do you do with the people who don't have boats?
Yeah.
Caro, it's been a wonderful conversation. It always is.
Well, and, I had a great time, too.
And I hope you have yourself a wonderful weekend, and I'm looking
Me
forward
too.
To next Friday already.
Me too.
All right. Take care, Caro.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Our pal Carolyn Kay from MakeThemAccountable.com. I look forward to my hour with Caro every Friday. Because we... Kara's one of those people that you know you can just go all you can sit there with your eyes shut and throw darts at the dartboard and she's going to be right there with you. And you know you can flesh out stuff and dope out stuff. And it's going to be a fun conversation. What about your conversation? What do you got on your mind? What are you thinking about? You're welcome to chime in at any time, even if you're not a sycophant. Yeah, hard to believe, but true. So we'll take a little musical interlude, a little break. And we'll come back, hopefully, with your thoughts. This is the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Well, that gives me the urge to merge. Limbo, limbo. Where I've been, I know you know that it's wearing me thin. The times are changing and it's about time. I'm rearranging all the guilt in my mind. I'm looking for a smart woman in a real short skirt. Smart woman who knows how to flirt. Smart woman got a mind of her own. Smart woman that'll take me home. Take me home. I'm not your macho kind of guy, but I can be so when I'm feeling shy. Hey, baby, where'd you get your good looks? Ooh, babe, I want to carry your books. I'm looking for a smart woman in a real short skirt. Smart woman knows how to flirt. Smart woman got a mind of her own. Smart woman that'll take me home. Beauty and brains.
best of both worlds. Think I can change. If you'll be my girl. I'm looking for a smart woman in a real short skirt. Smart woman, no, smart woman, got a mind of her own. Smart woman, that'll take me home. Take me home. I'm looking for a smart woman in a real short skirt.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Oh, very funny. Bob's probably running to the bathroom. I'll have you know I walk. Welcome to the second hour this Friday night. You know the phone number, 304-658-3333, if you've got your own unlimited dialing long-distance plan. If you need us to pay the freight, happy to do it. You know that, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. And there is still an abundance of topicality. Oh, there he goes, inventing words again. For the next 2 hours of the program. Just to sort of let you know where things stand, because he had such a fabulous guest last night, Peter Godbold went ahead and did a show, even though his pipes are kind of trashed. And, you know, even when you're not a singer, it's how you treat your pipes is kind of important when any time you're behind a microphone. So Peter has decided to give his vocal cords another rest this evening so that he can be loaded for bear, as it were, on Monday evening. So what I'm going to do is rerun last night's show, because it was a fabulous conversation with one of the dance music greats, Paul Parker. That's coming your way at 9 p.m. Eastern time. And I'm not entirely certain where we stand on the horn section. Haven't heard from horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner in a while, because he got back from his vacation, and you know what a vacation does to you, right? A vacation wears you out. So that you need a vacation to get over the vacation. But I haven't heard from Rick, so I don't know if he'll be going tonight in John's slot at midnight, or if he's going to want to do a horn section or not. So I'm awaiting word on that front. And you know what? Have I invited you lately to the headonradionetwork.com chat room? Just about any time there's a show going on, going live on the network, there's somebody in the headonradionetwork.com chat room. And we encourage your participation. We encourage you to join in. Enjoy the full multimedia experience. We haven't added video yet, but that is on the list, and it's on the way. But jump into the chat room, because unlike so many others that are profit-driven and profit-motivated, the headonradionetwork.com chat room is free to you. All you got to do is have a good sense of humor and urge to communicate and the smarts to type headonradionetwork.com into a web browser and click on chat room. Got a nice crowd in there this evening. And something else that's on the way, I don't know if you were listening to, I hope you were, to John Fox's show last night. He talked a little bit about another thing coming along, and as John said, a long time in the coming, but it is on its way, probably going live next week, the headonradionetwork.com message boards, which is, it's part of the full functionality idea that we've got behind this entire process. For those who don't like the sort of the real-time experience of the chat room, or those who see blog who might, I'm not the best blog negotiator on earth myself. I sometimes have a hard time getting around blogs. I know. I'm dim. Even as we speak, the VCR, CD, or DVD player combo in the living room is blinking, you know, 1200. It just is. The message board format is much is quite negotiable, though, and you can get all over the thing and find what you want to talk about. There will be individual fora, plural of forum, of course. There will be individual fora for each particular show, and there will be threads for politics, that kind of thing. Like I said, it'll be going live next week. Another chunk of full featured functionality at headonradionetwork.com for your delectation, your amusement, and your participation. I hope you will join in, and we'll let you know when it goes live. Yeah, you know, there are a lot of things happening as we proceed toward trying to grow a little bit more here at the Horn, and we grow every day. As mentioned, you know, we've got the ad campaigns going on through Google AdWords now, and we hope that it's a pretty reasonable, inexpensive way to get the word out, just to show people, you know, where we are, what we are, who we are, how we do it, all in an effort to foster the American dialogue, to foster the American discussion, the American debate. To look for answers to issues that may not be readily apparent to that wine-swilling, hummingbird tongue-munching crowd of insiders in Washington, D.C. Community building. That was the phrase that was first used by our dear friend Bruce Birch. In his show a couple of years ago, community building, and that is what it is. This is a matter of closing down and narrowing the distances between us from all the corners of the globe and bringing it together in one conversation, in one dialogue, one discussion, in one place. And I'm awfully proud of the all-volunteer effort that makes it happen, even when some people get positively hateful about it. You might be interested to know, if you were listening to the show last night, that while Matt, our challenged right wing nut, has not popped up, he does have a defender. Of course, that same defender is the same person who got all pissed off at the listeners and called them sycophants, and generally insulted the people who share their time listening to this program. That person is now and that person has copied me in on an email to Guy James, trying to threaten the network by moaning about me to Guy. Let me share, by all means. Dear Guy, because I know she's listening, you are one of the finest internet radio voices on the air today. Well, see, I would take issue with that, because I think Guy James is actually one of the finest voices on the air anywhere today. I put Guy up against Ed the Mushroom Head Schultz. I would certainly bet on Guy James in a battle of wits between him and, say, Randy Rhodes. I think Guy, for all the respect I have for Tom Hartman, I think Guy's got more fire in the belly than Tom does. And he comes from a slightly more credible place. But that's just my preference, because I've known Guy for a while, and I know how much heart and soul he puts into what he does. So to say that he's the finest internet radio voice on the air is damning with faint praise, at least in my book. But she goes on. That is why my decision to stop my support of your show is so very difficult. I'm disabled, and it took 2 years to get my Social Security award, so I must support a network that is at least respectful of its listeners.
bloggers and those in its chat room. What I mean is that Bob Kincaid, who I'm told owns Head On Radio, has become a hate monger. Yes.
Okay, gotta stop for a minute. Honey, I don't own the Head On Radio Network. I don't own it at all. I don't even own a piece of it. I just make it go.
Usually, he starts his show with 1 hour of pompous, flowery, televangelist-like, morose claptrap.
You know, and I'm the hate monger. By the way, Agnes is over my shoulder right now watching all this. Feel free to chime in, dear. Because after all, in her first note, she said, "Oh, for the days when Agnes was producing, then your show was worth supporting." But anyway.
I miss you all, too.
She does. She really does. She asked me for her old job back the other night. Didn't you, dear?
Yes, I did. And what did you tell me, Bob?
I said that you were doing far too good a job being a mommy and a grandmother to sacrifice all that to bring you back here.
And that's why I love you. But I would do it.
I know you would. And you know, when school lets out, maybe for those 3 months you can come back and play. Wouldn't that be fun?
That would be nice.
And when we've got the new studio built, wouldn't that be cool?
That would be excellent.
And we can sit and look at each other through the glass and make obscene hand gestures at each other?
Yeah, because I miss talking to you, Bob.
That's me, hate monger. Let's see, where were we? Pompous, flowery, televangelist-like, morose claptrap. His idea of conversation radio is to spout the world according to Bob until his one or two sporadic callers hang up. Hey, guys, you've been promoted. You're no longer sycophants. Now you're sporadic sycophants. See, the other night she was complaining that every night the same people called in, but now she's decided that they're not calling in every night, and they're sporadic. I think someone's off their medication.
Now, wait a minute. I thought that all of this, that the Head On Radio Network was a merging of a lot of different ideas.
Well, it was supposed to be, but no, I've taken it over. I'm like Godzilla or something over Tokyo. It's all me now.
Well, you can't do that. You have to share.
Bad talk, bad talker, bad conversation radio host, bad.
No, I've not heard one person who didn't have something to bring.
Me either.
All of the callers are wonderful.
Yes.
And that's what the horn was started for, was for everyone. It can't be just on one idea.
I couldn't agree more.
Well, I love and miss you all. I'm sorry that people may be disappointed.
Oh, wait. She's still mad. Those that do hang on are almost always the same five or so callers who call non-paying listeners moochers. Nobody's called anybody a moocher.
There are no moochers.
Don't we?
Haven't
you heard me, dear? And I know everybody else has heard me say, listen, if you can't support the network, we understand, because, you know, we kind of live in that place where we can't run around supporting other blogs or websites.
Well, I thought even by word of mouth, even by talking about the horn is support, and it's everyone's idea. It's everyone's talk radio.
Well, wait, though, because I introduced this by noting that Matt, did you see Matt's attempt at a blog post, dear?
No, I didn't.
Okay, I'll have to show that to you. I dissected Matt during the beginning of last night's program. We call him Matt not because we're making fun of him. That's how he signed his name. That's how he signed his blog post, Matt. Really.
That's cute.
Matt. Our dear friend here is... upset about the fact that now bear in mind this guy came into our house at headonradionetwork.com, attempted to post on the blog, and was vile and hateful from the outset. You liberals, you know, that kind of stuff.
I'm sorry, but I you know, we don't allow that with our children. Why would we allow it with an adult
or a total stranger?
But they do have a right to their opinion. They just have to be.
But they don't. They don't necessarily have a right to come in and like some sort of vile, pissed off chimpanzee in the monkey house start throwing poop all over the room. They don't get to do that.
Oh God.
So, but never mind. We're engaged in historical revisionism here. Because it has now been transformed into yesterday guy. He attacked a blogger whose only sin was to be a 22-year-old student guardsman who leaned to the right. Now wait, Agnes. You will call me on BS faster than anybody else on planet Earth and possibly some other planets. So I want you to see. If Matt's only sin is that he leaned, and this is the quote, leaned to the right, okay?
All right.
Here's how hello, I'm a 22-year-old student guard serviceman. I came upon your program through iTunes. I personally don't know where you get your funding, but the topics and the way you are defending your positions makes me laugh at you. I'm an independent voter, but by listening to your program, I hope to God that a person with your kind of disease does not take control of this country. Does that sound like this guy's only sin is that he leans to the right? You know, he's not all the way over on the right. He's just kind of leaning a little bit, like, you know, one leg's a little bit shorter than the other or something.
No, it doesn't sound like he's leaning. It sounds like that he's fallen and he can't get up.
Right. So, you know, I just want your...
But that's the way... Evidently, he's listening. And that's great.
Right, but because he's a chicken hawk... he won't call because his ideas cannot withstand scrutiny. That's the way the right wing is these days. If they don't get to argue in a vacuum and everybody has to shut up and give them their way, they can't win. And if they can't win, they won't play.
Well, if he's an independent voter, that's great. But the thing of it is that if everyone attacks each other, you're not going to get any better than what you have now.
Well, that's part of all of this. It's the fact that we are coming apart at the seams as we approach November, and that's part of this. But wait, this is sort of like a weird little hateful Ginsu commercial. Wait, there's more.
Great.
Let's see. Whose only sin was to be a 22-year-old student guardsman who leaned to the right. Bob called him a moron, retard, mentally challenged, and cut down his grammar and spelling. Well, first of all, I did not call him retard because I don't use that word. I simply do not use that word. And cut down his grammar. I did call him a moron, though. I really did. But, you know, look at the way it's written. I mean, there's an art. I didn't
That's
use.
That's just your opinion.
No, it wasn't a matter of. No, I think he probably falls into the DSM-4 categorization called moron. And I didn't suggest he was mentally challenged. I just suggested he hadn't learned much. I mean, you know, Matt and I, we learned all kinds of fun new words yesterday. One of the fun new words we used was history. He calls it not being able to undo the past. But I explained to Matt that there's another word for the past, and it's called history, and that sometimes it's valuable to learn it. Now, is that somehow a put down of Matt?
No.
Okay, just checking. And put down his grammar and spelling in the most mean-spirited and sarcastic manner I've ever heard.
I hate to tell everyone this, but, you know, Bob gets my grammar, my spelling all the time.
Yeah, but she throws things at me, so I've learned not to correct that. He castigated that poor soul worse than Flush Flimball ever did anyone. Now, wait a minute. Whose nickname for Rush Limbaugh is Flush Flimball? I do believe that was invented by our dear friend David in Middle Tennessee and shamelessly stolen by me. And here's our pal Laura being mean-spirited and calling him Flush Flimball. I do believe I'm going to get the vapors. Then he read the man's email address over there. No, I did that early on, honey. And encouraged his listeners to harass him. I did no such thing. You can go check it out for yourself. It was a disgusting show of an egomaniacal boob. Oh, honey, if you were the first one to call me Boob Kincaid, I'd probably send you a toaster. But it's a moniker that I wear proudly. And I'll have you know, it was first affixed to me, golly Moses, I think perhaps 1983? It just comes easy.
By your fiancé.
No, not by my fiancé. Jesus, will you close the grudge closet for a couple of minutes? It's not, llama lady, it's not all about you.
It didn't say me.
Llama, llama, do the llama. Make the llama face, Agnes.
Be nice, Bob, or you're going to not eat tonight.
Let's see. He called me a bitch on air as he read my email. I did not. I did not. I did not.
I better never hear those words.
No, no, no. I read the private message sent to me by someone else referring to her as such.
Well, I mean, comes down like this. For one, you might not want to share all your private messages.
No,
but,
I'm
considering how the word bitch has been bandied about, all the time that I spent back here, I got called bitch and a whole lot worse.
Oh, I know you did.
Many, 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 many folks.
But, you know.
But I stayed.
Well, right. And two wrongs don't make a right, although two rights did make an airplane. It's worth remembering.
But anyway,
for her, it was, as she says, for me, this was the last straw. On Monday, I'd written Bob, albeit a critical email, but not malignantly nasty. Well, friends and neighbors, we're going to... Okay, sorry, hate to do this. You tell me if this is malignantly nasty. You are condescending... Let's see. You are a blustering downer. You are condescending and self-righteous. It's your way or the highway. 90% of your callers are 90% the same crowing sycophants every single day. Is that malignant and nasty? You tell me, Agnes. Especially to the listeners.
I think it's sad.
No, she has specifically said that she was not malignant or nasty.
Was
that malignant or nasty?
Wait. I think it's sad that it comes down to this, to where when you're listening to someone, you automatically brand them. And you can't do that. Because if you shut out everybody's voice, well, yours is...
Well, I'm giving her voice.
I understand, but wait.
Am I not giving her voice?
Yes, you are.
Now, she sent this to Guy James, but for some reason known but to God and her, she copied me in on it.
That's because she wanted you to know.
That's because she wanted it read on air.
But hold on. If you shut out anyone's voice, your voice is going to be shut out too. If that's what you're looking for, then just, you know, keep going the way you're going. I would hope, because Bob will tell you right now, I'm not a kumbaya kind of liberal.
No, she's mean.
No, I'm not mean.
You're just mean.
No, I'm just realistic. I don't put up with crap of
any
sort.
That's what you call it. Yes, dear.
Yes. But I at least listen. Just because I'm not back here producing doesn't mean that I don't still get phone calls. Doesn't mean that I still don't involve myself in the horn while I'm doing other things. And I listen to all sorts of people. Some people aren't so nice. Some people are. But if you shut people down, you're going to be
somebody, dead. Is somebody being shut down here?
No. I'm saying, if you go ahead and brand,
clearly she would like for the people who call this program to stop calling, because she wants to shut them down, because apparently she doesn't agree with them or doesn't like their points of view.
I would hope that before that would happen, people who have something to say, call in. Say it. Don't just write an email. If you've got something to say, say it to everyone.
Well, at any rate, thank you, dear.
You're welcome. I love you guys.
They love you, too. I'm guessing. No, I know.
They don't like me. I'm just built that way.
So, you know, let's see. And the complaints go on and on and on and on.
He called me a bitch on air as he read my email and deconstructed my email in a similar fashion as he had done to the young man's blog. And then later she sent someone from her same IP address into the chat room a couple of nights ago, and they were nasty, and our moderator just sort of gave them the boot. Because, see, we want you to come to the chat room. We want you to enjoy the discussion and then the dialogue. There's a lot of wonderful personalities in there. And we largely get along without being nasty to each other. But some people can't do that. All week he made snide comments in respect to my email to me and stated he would not get over my email. No, I don't get over being insulted, and I remember them. You can save that turn-the-other-cheek BS for somebody who believes it. I don't. Here's the rub. I'm no longer going to be able to associate myself in any way, shape, or form with the head-on radio network. Now, see, isn't that classy? Tries to take the high road and does nothing but a bunch of name-calling, from sycophants to blustering downer, nut work. No, honey, this is the barn, remember? This is the broke-ass radio network. Arr, that's a joke. Guy, this means I'm canceling my subscription to your show. I wish you well. I will miss your show and Peter's show, but certainly not Bob. He makes me feel slimy. Laura from Michigan. Laura, honey, because I know you're listening, you forgot to email Ben Birch and tell him the same sad line of BS. So you might want to do that. There's a contact button over at whiterosesociety.org. This is just pathetic. But it is an example of what is happening to us. Because you see, while she says that, what was the language? Because this isn't about her. This is about us. And had to dummy up another email address, by the way, which I found interesting because I told her the last time that her other email had been blocked. Interesting, no? So she dummies up an email address to make sure that she gets her CC through to me. Or how did she describe it? She said, I had written Bob, albeit a critical email, but not malignantly nasty. Yeah, it was malignant, and it was nasty, and you deserve everything you get. And I'm not screaming at you. I just think you're a fool. Notice I didn't call you one. I said, I think you are one. And I think there's something sad and sort of psychotic about you getting off on emailing me this stuff so that I'll read it to you. But you did, and you do. And, you know, that's what we've got to deal with. And while you claim that you weren't nasty, you were. And the thing that irritated me the most was that if you wanted change, you could have cited examples where you thought I had gone wrong. Because no one in the talk radio universe is more open to receiving honest criticism than I am. It's part of my upbringing. It's part of why I am who I am. It's part of how I am who I am. In a wide variety of the things that I've undertaken in my life, the biggest part of the process was to be able to sit down and take criticism and learn from it. But Laura, honey, you didn't do that. You just jumped in and flung your barbs and tried your best to be hurtful, and now you're being petty in the extreme by attacking Guy James for things that I allegedly said. And that just makes you a sad, sorry little creature. And you have all of my sympathy. Let's go to the phones. Hi, who have I got?
Ron, 50.
Hey, Ron.
Now, I don't understand you telling me online, on air, that the moderator kicked me out because she didn't.
Yes, she did, Ron.
Didn't?
Did too.
Why would you lie like that, Bob? I don't know what.
There's no lying involved. She kicked you out, Ron, okay?
No, she didn't.
You were banned, Ron.
You're the Ron, so I wouldn't know.
Ron, you're the person who was using Laura's same IP address, okay, and claimed that you weren't, and you were banned. You were banned from the chat room, and that's all there is to it. Do you understand now? Good. Hi, who have I got?
You got me, Bob.
What's up?
How are you?
Just dealing with the ones coming out of the woodwork.
Ah, darn it. I thought it was me coming out of the woodwork. How are you and the family?
Oh, we're doing well.
Oh, good. That's wonderful. I have listened to so much and watched so many people turning inward and thinking that they are the nest, okay, or they are the beginning. And it's not that, Bob. We have so much to give to each other if we can just get out of ourselves, you know?
Bob, this is just exemplary of how people are coming unglued.
I know that. And, you know, okay. We've heard about people being banned from the chat room for this, that, or the other, feeling that they are being cut off or left out, and you know, it's not that simple. Sometimes, you know, people will say things that they shouldn't say or do things they shouldn't say, and there are times when you either have to take a stand and say, okay, I'd rather be banned than just sit here and be quiet, okay? And, Bob, you know, and I know, that I have been banned from the chat room. But I have been banned because I said something to...
Never mind the personalities involved.
Right, never mind the personalities involved. But I said something to someone that was... taken as either an insult or as a challenge, okay? Let's call it a challenge, okay?
Yeah.
And I knew that once I challenged someone in authority, that person in authority has the right and the duty to either accept the challenge or to do their duty. And I am more than willing to be set aside, shall we say. Because banned is a word we're going to kick you out of the clan. You don't belong. You're not family anymore.
No. But this case was a little bit different, Bob.
I understand. I understand it, but it's funny how we are, and I'm talking not you and I, or the head-on radio network, but the United States of America. We have taken these little side roads, okay, and we set our sights on winning this or getting that or being something that we are not. And, Bob, honestly, we are not a nation of the people, by the people, or for the people, because we're all individuals of and by ourselves, and until we can get out of ourselves and realize that this country, this nation, this world is in trouble. We're in trouble. We're in deep doo-doo, Bob.
Well, that's the thing. What some people, I suppose, take for bombast is merely a means. It's a delivery system.
Right.
But I don't. I guess it's a personal failing. I don't know how to talk all sweetness and light and Rebecca of Sunnybrook Farm about these hellish issues that present themselves to our nation.
There is no sweetness, nor what was that Rebecca of Sunnybrook Farm thing? Good God, you got me going back to the 40s, huh? Come on. This is not then. We have serious issues right now to deal with. We are listening to the mainstream media just pontificate and push down our throats one thing or another. John McCain or Hillary Clinton or this Barack Obama fella. And the thing is, none of them have all of the answers, but I do believe, Bob, and I'm going to tell you this honestly as I can, that Barack Obama, being the first black, white American president, would be a wonderful thing to have. And I'm going to say it for this reason. Because he's neither black nor is he white. He's not white in the white man's eyes. He's not black in the black man's eyes. He is right down the middle. I mean, just, hey, you can split him down the middle. You got a black half, a white half. And maybe he's the answer.
You know, I remember when Tiger Woods first came on the golfing scene, Bob.
Doing the names they
call them. Well, not just that, but and some of the sleazy stuff too.
Yeah.
I remember the remark of the one cracker golfer. I can't remember which one it was, who said that Tiger wouldn't be comfortable at Augusta because they didn't serve fried chicken. and Tiger just proceeded to go out and whip his ass, you know, and that's the best response to it. The larger point I was trying to make is that I remember when he came on the scene and people said, well, you know, what are you? And at first he tried to say, well, I'm a golfer.
I'm a golfer.
Well, no. And it shows how petty this country can be.
Yeah.
What race are you? And he refused to play the game, and he said, and this I remember this because it's such a little mouthful, he said, I'm a Kablan Asian.
Kablan Asian.
And by that he meant that he was Caucasian, black, Native American, and Asian.
Okay. Well, that's
and frankly, I'm not at all, and I know you're the same way, I'm not at all interested in Barack Obama's blackness or Hillary's whiteness, or John McCain's Martianness. I'm interested in whether they will do good or harm to this country. And at this point in time, I'm pretty well convinced that John McCain will do tremendous harm to this country, and that either Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama, while they are not my first choice, either one of them, will be miles ahead of McCain. Now, the issue that raises itself after that is one that I'm seeing more and more of, and that I can't just throw out the window. Is the idea of whether or not America deserves to have the Democrats fix it again, so some damn Republican, Jeb Bush maybe, can come along and break it all to pieces in another 4 or 8 years? And that's a legitimate inquiry, isn't it, Bob?
It is that, but let me ask you this, please, okay? If I were going to the polls today, I would have to ask myself a question, okay? What or whom I'm voting for, does it or does it not have a brain, okay? Is it capable of a cognitive essence? Can it hold a conversation? May it be able to give some sense to what it's trying to purvey to the rest of us? And to be honest with you, McCain of the three that are benighted is the least of all three. Hillary is probably, I would say, the most sly the most savvy of all three. But to be honest with you, this young man, this young Afro-Caucasian, Afro-Caucasian, that's wonderful, you know, or whatever name you want to put on his race, I think he's human. I think he's a human being. I think he has some good and some probably some dark sides to his personality, but I would venture to I would wager, but I would venture to say that he is probably the most intelligent of all three of them. For one thing, he did not, you know, just all of a sudden, because his reverend or his preacher taught one thing, just go out there and say, well, I stand with this idea. No, he sat like the rest of us parishioners when we sit in the pews and listen to the preacher in the pulpit. We just listen. But we don't have to agree with him. But he had to sit there because he just happened to be one of the parishioners. It's that simple, Bob. I'm not pontificating. You're not pontificating. I hope not, anyway. And you're not Preacher Bob tonight. So, but when he sits in that pew, he must listen to what the preacher says. It doesn't mean that he agrees with it, right?
Precisely.
So,
especially on a sermon that was given in 1993.
But you stop and think about it, Bob. This is what we have come down to. We're dragging someone into this, you know, verbiage or whatever, these words, these twisted words, and we're using that against someone that had to sit there and listen to it. It didn't mean that he agreed with it. It didn't mean that he came out and, you know, stood there and declared war against the United States of America. No, he went to Congress or to the Senate and became part of the United States Congress, which is the Senate and the Congress, or the House of Representatives and the Senate makes up the Congress, which are representatives of the people. But at any time has this young man made a declaration of anti-Americanism in any one of his speeches or any one of his So why are we holding it against him what somebody else said? That's the problem. We hold things against people that they didn't even say. And we hold things against people that they do say, and that we can do. It is correct for persons that we shall not speak of.
Well, but you're getting into the sliding scale, Bob, because you got to remember what is wrong for a Democrat to do is perfectly okay for a Republican to do in this sick and twisted country right now. To the extent that, you know, two right-wing fundamentalist pastors can sort of giggle and crow about 9/11 and say that the gays, the lesbians, and the liberals and people for the American way brought on September the 11th attacks. But, you know, an African-American minister can't point out the inequities that are sort of doled out on a daily basis to the African-American community.
There, Bob. There's a difference there. A big difference. Okay, the African-American pastor told the truth. Those right-wing white cracker pastors, all they did was lie, and all they did was defame. And, but this, you know, I agree with what was his name, Pastor White or Wright or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
No, I agree with him on 100% of what he said when he said GD, the United States of America, because Bob, if you stop and think about it. This country has been founded on three things, okay? One is racism, okay, which is slavery, okay? The other one, you know, this, I've heard it so many times about this manifest destiny, which was capital murder. We murdered a whole race of people. We destroyed the original continent of the United States, or continent of communities, if you want to call them communities. Call them
right. From 100 million down to about 10, and then onward down from there. Hey, Bob, I hate to break it short, but I've got to roll on. They're stacking up on me, brother. But damned well made points, my friend.
Well, thank you, and to everybody out there in La La Land, you know, kind of take your fingers out of your ears and stop going la 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 and listen for a change.
Ain't that the truth? Ain't that the truth?
Thank you, Bob.
And give our regards to Glenda, please.
She just told me to come eat supper, so I'll go do that. And you guys have a great weekend.
You get supper. I get me. Yeah, you're the lucky one. Talk to you later, brother.
Somebody else. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Hi, who have I got?
It's your sycophantic moderator, of course.
Oh, is this sycophantic ELO?
That would be sycophantic ELO.
Hot diggity.
Ron, listen, I banned you. And if you have a problem with it, you can email me. And you know, for people that might have trouble registering or logging into the chat room, this is for you too. But my email address is sue@headonradionetwork.com. But Ron, if you would like to email me, I will send you that part of the transcript where it shows you were banned. Sorry.
No,
but you're not going to come into the chat room. First of all, insult my boss in a private message where he had to send me a private message to get you to back off. That has never happened. Never. And then you insult the people in the chat room, it's not going to fly. And the one thing that we've always tried to be here is different. And the one thing that...
Different by means of being humane and civil and... Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the one thing that separates us from another well-known chat room is that, you know, we take so much grief and we take so much heartache in our day-to-day lives in the towns that we live in because of the views that we hold and we express, and we're just ripped apart. We made the decision early on that that was not going to be the way it happened in this chat room, and it's not. And
no.
Ron came in like I told him. Ron came in with a chip on his shoulder and thought he would take it out on everyone. It's not going to fly.
Nope. And it shouldn't. I would hope that the community that we're trying to build to is better than that, above that. You know, and it's why John Fox has poured heart and soul into creating these message boards.
Exactly.
Because we really, really want people involved with the dialogue and with the discussion. And you know what? We're liberals. We understand we're kind of behind the eight ball going in because, you know, it has been said, and I think in many instances fairly so, that it's sort of like herding cats or pushing a wheelbarrow full of frogs. Everybody wants to go off in their own different direction. But if we can just focus for a few minutes, maybe we can realize that there are greater things out there than the stuff that is in our immediate orbit. And that's why I keep honking on this business of, you know, John McCain is the problem.
Exactly.
And the only hope we have is that liberals in America and Democrats and decent human beings will figure out that John McCain is the problem, and they themselves, individually, collecting their own power, will become a part of the solution.
Right.
That's why I hammer on it with all, you know, whether we're talking about Coal River Mountain Watch or whether we're talking about political issues or issues affecting individual communities. At the end of the day, it's always be part, you know, think this way. I mean, I'm not trying to tell anybody how to be, but, you know, it doesn't hurt to think this way. How can I be part of the solution?
Right.
Sometimes this part of the solution is standing up to bullies.
Sure.
Because the problem will persist if you let the bullying persist.
Exactly. And like you said, if your only solution is a hammer, then all your problems look like nails.
And not all problems are, exactly. No matter how much they look like them. Exactly,
right.
Exactly.
It always takes a little more finesse than just beating the crap out of something.
But I have yet to figure out, and you know, nobody really knows. Well, some do, because we have these conversations off air and stuff. I know that every single person who gets behind a microphone on this network is constantly self-critiquing, and that includes me, constantly analyzing the program, constantly analyzing how we get the message across better. And we come from different places. Mark Levine often sounds like he is delivering a blistering deconstruction of the other side's argument, because that's where Mark Levine comes from. He is an A1 top-notch crackerjack lawyer, and that's how lawyers do their best work. I apologize for the fact that I come from I call myself a recovering Southern Baptist because I are one. I come from that tradition. And I come from, I come from that pulpit style, and it just happens to be what I do. John Fox comes from a place where he's cared intensely about the world around him, and he also has a tremendous amount of expertise in the entertainment music industry and in technology. So he is uniquely suited to address those issues. Shall we talk about Peter behind his back?
Sure.
God, I love you, Peter. You know, Peter comes from a million times. He's told us, he was a DJ in the gay clubs of Portland, Oregon. So he's gonna bring that mindset. But he also comes from a very strong Christian upbringing in the Deep South, similar to mine. And so he's going to, but he's a Methodist, see, and they don't do the hellfire and brimstone the way us Baptists do. So he's going to bring that slightly more rational approach to his Christianity.
Sure.
And that's without talking about what you and the other mods in the chat room do. The brain power that Lottie is going to bring to the message board forums. None of this could happen without Ben Birch, because Ben Birch is a blooming genius,
right?
And figured out a lot of this stuff before people even knew that it could happen. And so all of those things have to combine. And I haven't mentioned Guy. Dear Lord, I listen to Guy, and it's like listening to the kind of Democrats that I heard about growing up.
Right.
People who would just as soon be struck by lightning as ever drop a ballot for a Republican.
Yep.
And not
old yellow dog.
Yeah, and not because it's a matter of being loyal to the lodge, but because he comes from this place where he understands, by virtue of his rock solid Midwestern upbringing, that there is not a Republican policy that has ever done a blessed thing for him and the people that he loves. And so, that's the magic of the horn. Our news ninjas and the life that they bring to this. I hesitate to use the word because you know how I feel about them, but this is like a miracle. But it's a miracle that's brought about by a miracle of hard work. And Yeah.
That's one of the things that always, you and I have had this discussion off air. Like I've said before, we are hundreds and thousands of miles away from each other. We're not in the same building. If there's a problem, we can't get out of our chair, walk out of our office, and walk down to your office, or John's office, or Peter's office, or Guy's office, whoever. We have to work cooperatively, and we have to work without our egos, getting the best of us, and we have to work above all with what our listeners want, and what they want is a place, a network where they can A, get more than 3 minutes on a telephone without being potted down the minute the host wants to say something,
right?
And secondly, a place where they can express their opinions, where they're not going to be chastised just because it doesn't necessarily agree with everyone else's. That's what you call ditto heads. If you want that, I think the address is freerepublic.com. This is not there. There's no dittoing going on.
No.
Three, we disagree, but there's no, oh, ditto, ditto. There's no ditto.
You know, anybody who thinks that, well, no, I'm not going to give any more life to it. I'm not going to give any more life to the alleged criticisms. But suffice to say that, yeah, we have our internecine squabbles. It's not the Amen Hallelujah corner by any stretch of the imagination. But we this is not that.
Because to say someone is 100% right is just foolish. I mean,
and the thing is, I don't like gooning on people. I don't even like gooning on right wingers. I'm not like I said, on the few times. Well, I used to take them all the time, and I was nice to them until they started screaming.
Right.
And then held it as long as I could before I was dragged down to their level. But I wanted to use what I was talking about at the top of the hour as a sort of a, and I hesitate to use the phrase teaching because I don't feel like I'm teaching anybody anything. If anything, I'm getting taught. But some sort of an exemplary moment, Sue, because I have been saying all along that people would come unglued, and they are. People are losing their homes. The credit, their credit cards are bearing down on them. There's always a whole lot more month left when the money runs out.
Yep.
And it's and
you add an illness in on top of that.
Yeah.
People that just don't feel good are going to be on edge anyway. And if they don't have any health care to go get themselves well, it's only going to compound it.
Yeah. So, it makes my heart ache because I do have a sense, Sue, for how much pain there is out there in this country. And it grieves me to no end. I'm glad you called in and we had to, because sometimes we have to talk about what we want going forward out of this opportunity. You know, if that person, and I extend this to anybody, because I wasn't kidding when I said that critiquing is a big part of what I do, of myself. I take a lot. I don't share them because usually it's stuff that I can just incorporate into how I go about my daily job here, and so I don't show the bones. But I take a lot of suggestions. And I take them straight to heart, and I welcome them, and I encourage people to send them in. Everybody knows the email address. But when you get this mean-spirited crap, it's an opportunity to show people what is happening even inside our own little group.
Right.
So, I hope it can be taken in that spirit.
Now, put the stick down. Let's stop poking each other. We've got problems we need to work out.
Yeah, and we've got, we've got a real enemy out there. We've got real enemies.
Sure.
They're called Republicans.
Exactly.
And, to the extent that we can do it for a few thousand people, a few tens of thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people, growing all the time, then the light bulb goes on, and maybe people understand that these people who talk sweetly about the right to life and so charmingly about the right to work, maybe people will begin to understand and create new ideas and new ways of describing it and comprehending it, that these SOBs in the Republican Party don't mean us any good, Sue.
Right. That's right. And if anyone thinks for one minute that John McCain isn't loving the fact that he's gone underneath the radar while Hillary and Barack are taking their pot shots and, oh, Barack's preacher said that, Barack's preacher's not running. Hello?
Yeah.
He's not running for president, John McCain is loving it. In fact, you can bet he's sitting back at least once a week laughing about it. We're being laughed at again because we're being fooled.
Yeah, he ain't laughing at Barack or Hillary. He's laughing at us.
Sure. Look at them. Look at them dumb sheep. They'll get suckered into it.
I'm going to tell them I'm a war hero and they're going to vote for me. Ho, ho, ho.
That's it.
Yeah. Sue, have a wonderful weekend and thanks for everything you do.
You too, Bob. Hugs, Agnes.
Absolutely. Bye now. and rolling along. Hi, who I got?
Me.
Hey, Wayne, what's up?
Hey, this is Wayne.
Yeah.
One of the owners.
Yeah.
I understand there's a complaint.
I tried to handle it in the complaint department, boss, but it got out of hand.
Well, I think you're doing a hell of a job. You know, I...
Does that come with a raise?
Huh? Yeah, you get a raise. I'll double your salary.
Damn, I tell you.
All right.
If everybody could only have a boss like you.
Doesn't it?
Yeah. I'm not going to spend it all in one place either.
No, you won't. No, you won't.
I'm not going to spend it all in any place for that matter.
So listen, I'm a little confused. I didn't hear everything. Is Ron Laura?
There's an open debate as to that, yes.
Okay.
We don't know. Right. All we know is the email and the trip to the chat room came from the same IP address. That's all we know.
Yeah, that's, you know.
Not that it matters.
No, it doesn't matter. And, you know. And, you know, that's what this whole thing is all about. If Ron Laura, you know, would like to discuss opinions and, you know, things civilly, then he's more than welcome.
Sure.
Or
sure.
She.
But when the yelling starts, sorry.
No, we don't do that. We don't do that. But we can have...
You want screaming, you can listen to Michael Savage.
Yeah. We could have, you know, very good discussions and stuff like that.
Absolutely.
But, you know, if you have facts that you'd like to present, then yeah, present them. You're more than welcome. I mean, you know, in many ways, I missed that from the original show at the station and stuff that, you know, people would call in and, well.
Yeah, I was trying to think. I never can remember. The guy that was going to make Elite Fudge, what was his name?
Oh, God.
Yep. Stop it. But, you know, classic case of, you know, hi, how you doing? That's good. Try to be nice. And pretty soon...
What was his name? I forget.
And pretty soon he's screaming.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, that's no good, if you'd like to say. We accept other opinions. Voice them. That's what this is all about. Conversation radio. You know, I mean, what Mark Levine does that all the time with... Who's that Republican he has on?
Oh, Mike Lane.
Or defender of Republicans?
Yeah, Mike Lane. Yeah, it just gives me the vapors. Ugh.
I know.
I've begged, but he persists in having Mike on the program. And, but I don't. You know, we don't run editorial.
Well, it's his program.
We don't do editorial content.
No, we don't.
I'm responsible for my show and no one else's.
That's exactly right.
And I'll sit here behind the board and produce a program. And if somebody wants to sing grand opera, they got however long they've got to do it.
There you go. Well, I think handle everything well, and you know, people, like I say, this is for open discussion, and if you can do that in a you know, fairly nice manner, you're more than welcome. If you want to get mean and nasty, then...
We can do that, too.
You get banned.
Yeah. It's like... Well, I'm sure you've seen it out there on cars from time to time. This one very simple, little, almost Zen-like, in its simplicity, bumper sticker that says, mean people suck.
Yeah. They do.
It's true.
Yeah. It's very true. Very true. Anyway, buddy, I just want to call in and say hey, and, you know.
Well, I appreciate it.
You know.
And, you know, lest there be any doubt, this is the boss, folks. Bob does not own the horn.
No, yeah. That was, on purpose, too.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when you, as you did, make everything that the horn has, when you provide it, you get a say-so. And, I mean, I think that's only fair.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more.
Somehow I knew you would.
I couldn't agree with you more. Listen, buddy, I'm going to listen to the rest of the show here and, you know.
All right. Sounds good.
I'd like to hear some more different callers.
Yeah. And, you know,
and thank everybody that's connected with this network and everybody that does all the things that makes this possible and that do not get paid. None of them.
Yeah.
You know, thank you very much.
And that's, you know, part of indeed. And, you know, we hope it's part and parcel of the new advertising program. It's part and parcel of everything that's going on, trying to get to the point where we have enough of a revenue base that we can do more than pay the daggum bills.
I buy my Powerball ticket every Wednesday and Saturday.
Yeah, exactly. And I was I got to get mine tomorrow. I'm running behind. Wayne, take care and have a wonderful weekend.
All right, brother. Same to you, man.
Later.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Onward. Hi, who have I got?
Hey, Bob, it's Preston.
Hey, Preston, how are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
You know, just sort of keep wrapping rubber bands around it to keep it from all falling apart, you know.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But, you know, we're holding up.
I noticed West Virginia lost a close game the other evening.
That hurt last night. Yeah, it was one of those cases where stuff falls apart for 1 second and everything. Yeah, we made it to overtime, but we failed to cover a guy in the waning seconds, and he drained a three, and that just killed us.
Mm. My dad went to Duke actually, and he's certainly a big fan. And typically, I don't like the dynasty type teams. I like to root for the underdogs.
Yeah, the same thing happened. Yeah, exactly.
But I have come to like Duke as I've kind of gotten to know the school a little bit better. It's a beautiful campus.
Oh, it is.
And, yeah. And they're doing some wonderful things in like environmental management programs and stuff like that and green design. And they actually have two professors who have the honor of being on David Horowitz's blacklist of 100 or so liberal professors.
Yeah, not sufficiently conservative enough. Yeah.
Right. One of the professors is Frederick Jameson, who dares to study some of those ideologies we're not supposed to look at with a critical eye, just dismiss them, you know, Marxism and socialism and all those terrible things. You know, it was the American communist movement that helped to create this country, some of its better aspects. I mean, they put the pressure on FDR to create some jobs and a social network. So, yeah, I'm glad there are people carrying on the tradition.
Absolutely, and it's a magnificent school. A lot of my gripe has to do with the basketball coach.
Yeah.
When you do nationwide ads for American Express and then turn around and say, "Well, no, that couldn't possibly inure to the benefit of my recruiting."
Right.
Little bit duplicitous, if you ask me. But you know, then again.
Yeah. You know, my dad was talking about how recently they seem to not be recruiting very well. And Krzyzewski, I think he went to West Point and I think was a student under Bobby Knight, a very authoritative.
Did he go to West Point or did he arrive at West Point as an assistant to Bobby Knight?
Good question.
Because I don't think Krzyzewski is a West Point grad.
Okay. Do you know where he went by chance?
No, I don't. But I'll bet you we can find it out as quick as I remember how to spell the name.
Okay, but anyway, still the West Point experience, and my dad said they haven't been recruiting very well lately, and I was wondering if maybe some of the students are becoming less tolerant of being treated poorly. You know, like your previous caller was saying, you know, there are just some mean people out there, and it's good to see some people are just rejecting it more and more. So my dad was actually talking about the Duke-North Carolina game, and he mentioned how, boy, the Duke coaches come out. They're all so serious. They look like they're pallbearers at a funeral and drawing faces while the North Carolina bench, they're all dancing and having a good time. And And just an interesting contrast in coaching styles.
Well, and that's the thing, Krzyzewski, and I don't, you ever heard Jim Rome? The sports, refuses to call him Krzyzewski. I'll call him Krzyzewski when he puts an SH in the front of his name. I think he said that.
Okay.
Calls him Coach Krzyzewski. But Krzyzewski is undeniably among the greatest in at craft. But there is he gets a pass, Preston. And that is that while he studied at the feet of Bob Knight and learned Bob Knight's habits and tactics and all of you know basically got imprinted with Bob Knight.
Yeah.
The fact that he doesn't throw chairs apparently gives him a break. But you know, if you go behind the scenes and you do read what others say. When the door of the locker room closes, it's not a pretty place.
Okay. Yep.
So you can't take away from him from his absolute dedication to graduating students, as opposed to getting players through 4 years of college and then letting them go whither the wind blows them. He graduates students. He also graduates. Fairly well scoring students, and hasn't been surrounded with a great deal of scandal.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, yeah, I kind of side with you. It's rooting for Duke's easy. Rooting for UNC's easy. A little less so with Kansas, but they're in that same category. It's like rooting for the Yankees, and I don't mean to offend the Yankee fans, but where's the thrill in it? You know. I don't know. I guess I've got some sort of psychosis that puts me in that place where. It's more fun to be surprised and pleased when you win. That's why I watch Mountaineer football games through two clenched fists and a crack in my fingers, just waiting to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory.
Speaking of rooting for UNC, another beautiful campus. The former coach, what was his name? Dean something?
Dean Smith. Sure.
Dean Smith. Yes, I noticed he. Did a lot of campaigning for local Democratic candidates in North Carolina political races.
And I'm proud to say that he's also a member of my fraternity.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's a Phi Gamma Delta.
Okay, great.
No, we don't just turn out little right-wing robots, the Greek system. Every now and then it spits out a liberal or a Democrat, like me and Dean Smith.
Yeah, whereas I think Krzyzewski... has lobbied for Republicans. I know here in Denver, Mike Shanahan and Elway and others have been at rallies for Bush in the past and other figures. Most recently, though, the former wide receiver Rod Smith did an introduction for Barack Obama a few months ago.
Oh, wow. That's inspiring because, I remember when the Red Sox were on their way to what many were hoping would be the breaking of the curse and all of that. Kurt Schilling, in the middle of all that, came out and got all pro-Bush. And here I am going, yeah, break the curse. Ah, good for the Sox. Maybe the Cubs are next. And Kurt Schilling comes out and, I think George Bush is the man. And it's like, couldn't you have waited till after? Let me enjoy this, for heaven's sake.
Right,
and that just had to go over like a cockroach in the oatmeal cookies in Boston, for heaven's sakes.
Have you come across the sports writer? He wrote a book entitled Welcome to the Terror Dome. And I know that's kind of an ominous-sounding title, and in some ways it is a very critical book, but... it's a very funny book as well. He's an amazing writer, and he's dedicated himself to following these interesting political stories within sports. And
Dave Zinn?
Yes. I was just wondering, have you discovered his work? Do you know?
I haven't read the book, but I have. I've seen some of his other writing elsewhere. And you're right, he's a genius. I love a great sports writer.
Yeah.
I think back to Roger Angell, and you know this country has a brilliant history, really, of having some of its best social commentary sneak into the public consciousness by way of its sports writers.
Yeah.
You think of Grantland Rice, who said he was the only man in America whose newspaper syndicator would allow him to telegraph a poem. And it was true. And I'm trying to remember that there.
And there's certainly also some reactionary political messaging going on within sports. I don't hear Jim Rome a lot, but I've heard that he has some kind of regressive political stances.
Oh yeah, he is. But he's the thing that makes him slightly tolerable, apart from all of the Valley Girl upspeak that he does, is that you get the idea that he understands he is getting paid very well to basically. He's getting paid very well for a BS job.
Okay.
But yeah, he's kind of biting. He's probably more like Michael Savage than anybody else.
Yeah, and the way he pits his audience against each other. I mean, I understand like the spirit of, I don't know, I guess slam poetry is more my speed if it's going to be confrontational, but some of theirs, they call them smackdowns, right?
Oh yeah. And they you know, he welcomes callers to the program by telling them to have a take and don't suck.
Okay. Yeah, it's
yeah, that's welcoming.
Rude. Yeah.
But then again, he is playing to a demographic, Preston, is not known for its subtleties.
Yeah, a demographic that can be vulnerable, you know, emotionally or intellectually or whatever. Myself included, I think.
I was producing Peter's show last night, Preston, when I was very charitably being given email updates because I couldn't go watch the Mountaineer game. So I was following this by email, and when the word finally crossed that, you know, we sort of lost it right at the very end of overtime, there was something that happened inside of me. Oh, damn. You know, because it's one of those situations where it's a little bit easier to be blown out than it is to lose a heartbreaker.
Yeah.
And something happens inside you, and I can't account for it. I'm sure there's some psychologist somewhere who could.
Yeah. Well, it's like nationalism. I think, Einstein critiqued it as one of, like an infantile disease, he called it. But on the other hand, nationalism, I think, can be constructive and perfectly natural. You know, these associations we create with the symbols of our communities, it can be a healthy thing.
Oh, by the way, another guy worth reading, that you might enjoy sometime if you want to pick up a copy of anything that he wrote, Patrick McManus.
Okay, I don't think I.
From a bit of days gone by, but one title that comes to mind just because I hitch onto titles and love them, wrote a wonderful book called "They Shoot Canoes, Don't They?" An obvious take on the
they shoot horses.
Yeah.
Well, actually, your audience might want to know that reference. They shoot horses, don't they? Or
it was a damn fine movie from the late '60s. I believe Jane Fonda was in it.
Okay.
And I remember doing scenes from it in acting class in college. But excellent, and it's. It's been a long time since I've seen it, so I don't think I can do it justice, frankly. But the title, the play on the title, "They Shoot Canoes, Don't They?" always stood out. And he is an excellent, excellent outdoors writer. Okay. So, you know, worth the effort if you run across it in the cutout bin or at the local used bookstore, you know, pick it up.
Okay.
You won't
keep an eye out.
Yeah, you won't be disappointed.
I'll keep an eye out for it for sure. I'm looking forward to seeing a book discussion tomorrow at the Tattered Cover bookstore here in Denver. They actually have three different branches now. They're doing quite well. And someone speaking on an issue we talk about a lot, kind of food security and food traditions. And I think the title of the book is Closing the Food Gap.
Hmm.
Yeah. I heard an interview this morning on a community radio station we have. And again, just as a reminder to us that there are a lot of people doing very good radio work. But anyway, this morning they interviewed this author, and the call that they got, this one call from somebody in Boulder or Denver, and he talked about how much time people are kind of compelled to spend on their lawns, either through traditions or pressures. You know, there are these zones, you know, community covenances where people have to have these bluegrass lawns, constantly manicuring them and fertilizing them.
And poisoning them.
Uh-huh. Well, this guy called in and talked about how, with a lot less time, but still work, definitely, he was able to grow this garden that's been so great for him and something he's been sharing with his neighbors as well. And, you know, those are the radical acts that are, you know, that are commonplace.
You know, I've known people, Preston. I mean, I really have. I've known some of those people who get obsessive compulsive about their lawns.
Yeah.
And one sprig of crabgrass can start a full scale weekend war that leaves the person more exhausted by Sunday night than he was on Friday evening. And I got, you know, I don't get it. I really, really don't get it. And you know,
you and I don't.
Yeah, you know, we got the typical hillbilly yard here. You know, we keep the grass mowed and everything, and it's beautiful. I mean, there's some blue and just, you know, yard grass and some rye and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you mow it, and it's gorgeous, and it smells like heaven on earth. I think heaven smells like fresh cut grass.
Yeah, there you go.
Without the, you know, without the the gasoline engine exhaust in it.
Right.
But you can lay down on it, roll in it, and I think of that that scene from what was it, Michael, where John Travolta played the angel, and he saw the dog rolling in the grass. He said, "That's really my nature. I'm a grass roller."
There you go.
But then, you know, there's no surer way to make it rain than to mow your grass around here. And so it'll rain. You know, you'll just get done. The clouds will pile up, and then it'll rain. And the next morning, you get up, and there are a million dandelions blooming in your yard. And you know,
we should be harvesting.
Yeah, they're pretty. The greens are tender, and you know, anybody who's ever had a pot of dandelion greens cooked up with a little bit of hog jowl or fatback or whatever, that's some eating. Or even olive oil, it's still mighty, mighty good. And there's different ways to deal with it, and poke greens. You know, down south where I grew up, you know, poke just drove people crazy. But when you pick those leaves when they're young and tender, oh, the salad, oh. Mm.
Yeah, and you know, I've never had dandelion, but I know they sell them across the street. I live right across the street from it's a Wild Oats grocery store.
Sure.
Okay, and soon it will be a Whole Foods. You know, there's that big buyout.
Right.
Which is kind of disappointing to see.
Because we can't have two franchises selling organic food in this country. No, no, no.
Right, right. But, you know, there are some smaller ones, actually, coming along the way. We have this chain called Vitamin Cottage. I think it's just here in Colorado, and I think they have about half a dozen stores, and they're doing a lot of things really well.
Well, you know, I used to buy those Celestial Seasonings tea, and I still do. But then I realized that they had gone from, you know, a little company in somebody's back shed to being bought out by some humongous conglomerate, and it's like, well, damn, you know, because it kind of ruins it for you. You mentioned, you know, the store sells dandelion greens. You can go into some, I'm sure you could go into some top-flight, four-star, Michelin-guide-type restaurants in Denver and for about $19.50 be offered a plate of tender spring baby greens with a lovely huckleberry vinaigrette.
Yep.
And again, you know, $20. And, you know, you wind up with a hell of a lot more plate than you do greens. And, you know, the poor folks in the hills are out here saying, you rubes, we picked that out of the yard.
Yep.
I was, you know, I've talked about Tony Bourdain a bunch. I watched the episode he did in Peru, and they took him to just a little, you know, off the beaten path there in Lima, ceviche shack, and served him these beautiful little pieces of fresh caught fish, you know, marinated in lemon juice, you know, because the acid actually cooks the fish and blah blah blah. And he looks at his host and says, "You know, I stick this on a white porcelain china plate and put it in front of somebody in New York City, I get $30. And, you know, it was a meal that would probably cost every bit of 75 cents between them.
Yeah, yeah. That's interesting. My dad had mentioned that he was in Peru. I missed that episode, and I'm going to have to find it on DVD or something, or download it or whatever.
I found it on YouTube. Tony Bourdain, Peru.
Great.
Don't tell.
Check that out. Do you happen to know, my dad mentioned that it appeared he took part in a tea ceremony. Do you remember something about
that? I know he has, and I haven't seen it, but yes, he has.
Okay, interesting.
And the tea ceremony is just fascinating. What a beautiful piece of ritual. And I did something that was very unenvironmental yesterday, Preston.
What's that?
Yesterday, we had the second of two dentist appointments for the kids. You know, because you can't get it all done in one day. Oh, no, Bob's got to do the round trip to Charleston twice in a week. 100 miles, $3.50 a gallon.
Wow.
So yesterday was also my youngest's birthday. And so with that in mind, I said, okay, where you want to go? Be reasonable. And they said, take us, you know, we want sushi. Well, of course you want sushi. And lo and behold, sitting there on the blackboard of the specials, it's not on the menu, can't always get it, but three very simple little words, letters, U-N-I, uni. And that is sea urchin roe.
U-N-I?
U-N-I, uni.
Oh, okay.
And it is a delicacy among delicacies. And, you know, I said, okay, yes, you can. You can try it.
Fun.
Because they've seen Tony Bourdain eating it.
Oh, wow.
And I got it, and everybody got a taste. And you know what? It's delicious. I've had it before. But on the way home, I couldn't help thinking, Preston, that I had just screwed up monumentally. Because the sea urchin population is threatened. And... this is the life of a liberal, I guess, because you do think about this, and I do think about cattle and slaughter pens and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I try to reverence them. I really do.
Yeah.
But I'm in West Virginia, and I'm eating sea urchin roe that has been brought from the Pacific Ocean by means God knows how.
Yeah.
Because I can't imagine that stuff freezes very well. But it was sweet, and it was buttery, and it was delicious, and it had no business being on a menu anywhere in West Virginia.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe there are some circumstances in which, depending on how it's raised, and I don't know, maybe there's a commerce there that can take place that at least is more just. I don't know. I know maybe it may have been grown in one of these fish farms. Do you know if it was wild or if it was
I have no way of knowing. But I don't think they farm well. I could be wrong, but I don't think they farm well.
Okay.
And the sea urchin doesn't get well after you get the uni either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Saw a story recently where they're trying to...
Oh, and by the way, I was wrong, Preston. I've been informed by another of our sports fans in the audience. Yes. Coach Krzyzewski. Sorry. Krzyzewski. It was West Point 65-68 and played basketball for Knight from 66-68.
Okay.
And he also mentions Fred Russell and Mitch Albom as great sports writers, and I couldn't agree more.
You know, and I didn't mean to imply that West Point necessarily is this terrible dungeon where everyone...
Oh, no. I don't think, and I didn't take it that way. And I don't think anybody else did either.
Oh, good. I want to be clear about that. In fact, I found a website recently, I think, West Point grads against the war.
Oh, wow.
Sound familiar? But several West Point grads who have been speaking out on this issue and, on, I mean, dissenting, discussing issues of what the goals of the military should be, when it should be utilized, that kind of thing. So,
somebody in the officer corps especially, and that of course is what West Point turns out, if you really, really love the Army and love the military and reverence the military for what the military should be reverenced for, courage, honor, sacrifice, how can you look at what's been done to it in the last 5 years and feel anything but unmitigated horror?
Yeah.
Because this is the direct antithesis of every single theory around which our military has been built. You know, I saw a number pointing out that our military right now is at its smallest size since 1939. And I think that's a good thing.
Me too.
But you can't take a military of that size and try to fight World War III.
Yeah.
And that's what they've done, because, you know, that's the way they've characterized it. Oh, this is World War III. This is the fight for freedom against Islamofascism.
And I think both Obama and Clinton have proposed adding another 80,000 troops. So, this militarism—it's a real problem. And
meanwhile, today one of the Marines who was charged in the massacre of 24 innocent Iraqis walked. He was getting ready for his court martial, and everybody said, "Hey, you know what? I think we'll just dismiss the charges against this dude."
Mm-hmm.
And they had sought his testimony against, I guess, the sergeant who was primarily responsible for giving the orders. And he didn't, he wouldn't rat, so to speak. He wouldn't take a plea deal in exchange. And so they just turned the guy loose. The evidence was solid that he committed murder, Preston. And see, you can say things about our military and still not be a military hater. People do awful things under awful circumstances. And in this particular instance, the things that our military has been called upon to do, no military should be called upon to do, because it is an offensive war.
Yep, that's right. That's right. Our national defense has turned into an offense. And have you heard about this movie coming out, Body of War?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
But not much. I mean, I've seen it advertised on websites and so forth.
Well, I understand that Phil Donahue helped to produce it.
Oh, yeah, yes, absolutely. It is his movie, and in fact, Mark Levine talked to him at the Take Back America conference about it.
Oh, great.
Sorry, I hadn't connected the dots. It's a long week sometimes.
Yeah, sure. And I saw Donahue on C-SPAN. Brian Lamb was interviewing him about it, showing clips from the film. It's very powerful, and... And I spoke with Amy Goodman on Democracy Now!, and I guess it'll be out in theaters in the next week or two. That
Phil mentioned the D.C. premiere was coming up very shortly, and Mark promised to be there.
Great. The right-wing host, won't call him conservative, because that's just the term they've kind of co-opted. But Hugh Hewitt is very angry about this film, and he talked about it the other day, and talked about, it's exploitative of the troops, and these America haters like Donahue should be ashamed of themselves for doing this sort of thing. And it was interesting, though. A woman called up and challenged him and was like, "Who are you? You know, this is the veteran's response. This is his words, and we're just listening to this troop." And she really, it was great to see her challenge him like that. And, but anyway, it's good to see new media developing all the time.
And you know, this idea, and I think, like you said, conservative has been co-opted, Preston.
Yeah.
I think also that this absolute black and white dichotomy of, you know, if you're not for the war, you somehow hate America, I think that's fallen to the wayside a little bit, don't you? I mean, do you sense that?
I do. You know, it's interesting. Some of their info campaigns have really not gone well. Like, they were all behind Mitt Romney, and, you know, he may still end up on the ticket, but they weren't getting the kind of support from their callers that they typically do. Ditto heads were wandering off the plantation, and some of them are much more moderate towards Muslim people and immigrants than, you know, they want them to be. And I don't know. Even McCain, you know, for all his many, many problems, he's against drilling in Anwar. He may change his tune, certainly.
I think there's every indication that he likely will, as soon as the money tells him that we have to.
But
because,
still,
I mean, that's just been his M.O. so far, Preston.
Yeah. I think it's still useful, though, to bring up and to show to other conservatives or right-wingers who, you know, it's okay to think like this. You know, one of your own, at least at one time in his life, had a bit of sanity and was concerned about the environment and thought, Eisenhower, true conservatives are people in their moments were true conservatives, like Eisenhower thought it was a good idea to establish the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. And this whole deceit that, you know, Sean Hannity keeps laying out to what he calls fellow great Americans, he says to them, he lies to these great Americans, his audience. He says, they won't let us get the oil. You know, you don't like gas at $4 a gallon. Why don't they let us get that oil and bring that oil here? Well,
but that's
a false proposition. Yes, it is.
Because
it's going to China or where?
Well, not just that, but getting the oil is not going, because there's only 6 weeks of oil at current U.S. usage rates in Anwar. So it's not even a penny's worth of difference on the barrel.
Yeah.
And you know, they can't stand it when you gainsay that, but it's true.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I have it's kind of hard to swallow, but you know, I've been talking a lot about this book I've been reading, Collapse. I think you and I talked about it a little bit.
Yeah, Jared Diamond.
Yeah, I'm toward the end of it, and lo and behold, he's trying to do this balanced approach or balanced analysis to business responses to environmental needs. And he makes a convincing point. And the biggest part of his praise goes to Chevron, oddly enough, and his experiences with them in an oil field in Papua New Guinea, as compared to his experiences in an oil field in Indonesia that was run by the state-run oil company.
Okay.
Which was a nightmare, but Chevron apparently... Well, he asked one guy, he said, you know, why are you guys being so sensitive about the environment? And he said two words, Exxon Valdez. And that apparently the CEO of Chevron has had the light go on for him and understands that in the long run it's better for shareholders if they don't rape the environment and wind up with huge judgments against them or huge legal fees fighting huge judgments.
Yeah. I think Paul Hawken and people like that, Amory Lovins, Hunter Lovins, they make a compelling argument along the lines of the need for the role of corporations in social change and the potential for their revolutionary role, oddly enough.
It is within corporate America's power, Preston, to make universal health care happen almost overnight, and eventually they will, and that's when we'll get it. I don't mean to be cynical about grassroots efforts, and I think we need to continue to militate for it, but we'll get universal health care when American business realizes, and as it is, that it is in American business's best interest for universal health care to be put in place in the United States.
You know, and I think, generally speaking, that's true. But there are narrow business interests, though, that are tyrannical and that do need to be.
Sure they are.
Their charter's revoked. They need to be taken.
And Jared Diamond makes no bones about saying that Chevron is an exception and not the rule. But the idea that there's one out there that can contribute that thinking to the overall corporate culture is at least a beacon of hope.
Yeah. Ross Gelbspan, who's one of the leading climate concern speakers, you know, I'm talking about climate change, and he's constantly debating fossil fuel people, and he knows their tricks, and he is extremely concerned about the issue. At times he feels very hopeless and very sad for his daughter's future, and especially grandchildren, thinking a couple generations out. But even he has a very nuanced perspective on corporate power, and he tells a story about how in Europe there are these European CEOs who talk about Exxon and how lacking in scruples they are, and they're ashamed that there are people in this business that behave like they do, and how, especially in their propaganda campaigns, they buy these editorials in the New York Times, and they have a big and a deceitful influence on the public dialogue.
Did you see the cancer study story that came out earlier this week, Preston?
I don't think so.
Okay, here's a prestigious institution. I mean, this is not, it's not the Podunk Community College that's putting this study out. No, it's Cornell University.
Okay.
And Cornell University released this amazing little study that said via use of diagnostic methods, if it's caught early enough, 80% of lung cancers can be cured.
Huh.
And the first thing you think is, wow, you know, that's impressive.
Right.
But it turns out that, and this is a philosophical question about, you know, about what the overall effects are of corporate money, but it turns out that the study was sort of funded on the sly and on the shady by the tobacco companies.
Okay.
And they didn't disclose it, and it's just dirty.
Yeah.
And because it is associated with the tobacco industry, the findings of the study are called into question, as one would argue that they probably should be.
Yeah, yeah. And, even if some government entity did it, you know, we should view it skeptically. But, yeah, when some of these narrow business interests put money to develop their own research, I mean, they're just having an overwhelming effect. A person who influenced Noam Chomsky quite a bit, a guy named Alex Carey, talked about how the 20th century was marked by three major developments, and that was the growth of corporate power, the growth of democracy, and the growth of corporate propaganda to thwart democracy. And actually, I want to mention a quote from Edward Bernays, who's considered the father of public relations. And he's a nephew of Sigmund Freud. He said, those who manipulate the unseen mechanism of society constitute an invisible government, which is the true ruling power of our country. We are governed, our minds are molded, our tastes formed, our ideas suggested, largely by men we have never heard of.
How very, very true.
Yeah, yeah. And he wrote that in 1928 in a book called Propaganda. And Joseph Goebbels actually was a big reader of his.
Really?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, it's a little disturbing.
It did.
Hey, Preston, I've got to roll along. We're almost out of time, and I've got to take care of a little bit of business before we go. But
sounds good.
What a wonderful conversation. Thank you so much, and I wish you a wonderful, wonderful weekend.
You too.
All right, take care, Preston.
Bye-bye.
Oh, I love these chats. I mean, it's why we invented conversation radio. Because it's more fun. It's more informative. And it's more uplifting. Because it's available to everyone who simply wants to pick up a telephone. We'll even pay for the call. A couple of pieces of information to pass along. First of all, please, please, please remember that there is more programming on the horn on the weekend. And Billy Shear's Night Sounds will come your way at 9 p.m. Eastern Time Saturday and run in rotation with Rick's Place with horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner this weekend. Also, I mentioned that the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com forums, message boards, would be going live next week. Sorry, gang, I was wrong. They're live now! HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/forum. And when I say slash, I mean forward slash. I assume I don't have to say forward. Look, I just said it twice. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/forum. Get in there. Be among the first. Jump in. Start the conversation. Keep the conversation rolling, even when the live programming isn't. Isn't that cool? And I don't know if I am supposed to put this out for public dissemination, but I'm a gonna. And I hope I don't hurt anybody's feelings in the process. Or one person's feelings in particular. But I think, you know, you kind of deserve to know. I just got a note back from horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner. He says, I wanted to get you a 3-hour show for Saturday, but people keep calling me, and even now, I've not completed hour one. I'm sure that I can get 2 hours if I don't stop for the Friday show. So there's no horn section and no Rick at midnight tonight. But then he says, Bob, I love doing that, but people will not respect my time. If they would, all would be fine, but they will not. Perhaps they wish for me to fail. I can see no other reason for me to get more phone calls on Friday than any other day of the week, and from people I've told over and over not to call. This is stressing me, Bob. I can no longer do it. This will be my last show. I'm so sorry. And so am I. But you know what? That is part and parcel of the way things go around here. Because we're not multimillionaire personalities who have nothing to do but this. We're working people. If we could have turned it into a word, maybe we should have called this the Working People's Radio Network. Because that's what we are more than anything else. Working people. We get sick. We have family obligations. We have jobs. And they have to come first, you see. So, I'm sure that Rick will probably address some of this in his show this weekend. I hope you will be around to listen to it. I'm bummed out because I love the perspective that Rick was bringing to it. And let's see. Finally, yes, a clarification. I have been asked to pretty please, make this clear. Kate chimed in because it was Kate that Barb was directed to. In one of those screeds. And Kate asked me quite straightforwardly, for the sake of accuracy and clarity, The emailer was correct. I have referred to non-supporting listeners as moochers. That wasn't meant to be condescending. It was a literary reference from Ayn Rand's Atlas Shrugged. And that's true, because we talked about it. It is a particular, well, not going to explain the book. If you've read it, you know what she meant. If you haven't, you want to, okay. The word in that regard means people who naively or purposefully take or use at the expense of others. I won't retract my statement, Kate says. We wouldn't be in financial straits if everyone sent in a paltry sum. This medium presents us a forum to have just exactly this kind of discussion. But next week, it's the fussing will be as boring as the fussing in the Democratic Party and white folks fussing about Reverend Wright's 38-minute sermon that has rarely been heard in its entirety. Signed, your most critical sycophant, Kate. I understand that, and that's why, for me, that's what makes this so special. This is an internet radio network, so odds are, if you're listening, you have probably seen just about everything and then some that I have seen and might comment upon. But I, myself, cannot by myself determine what you find compelling or what you find telling about our culture, our government, our society, our past, our present, and our future, you see. And so consequently, by focusing on the idea of conversation, discussion, and dialogue, we create something that is entirely new and different. Not host-driven, but listener, caller, speaker-driven. And that is what we aim for. And we do it, each and every one of us, with our own styles that are formed by our own upbringings, our own realities, and our own concerns. I don't know if this person is still waiting. Nope. But that's why things are the way they are. That's why the shows are the way they are. And all I can do is encourage you to be a part of the conversation. Whether that conversation takes place on Strictly Confidential, on All Foxed Up, on Guy James's program, on Mark Levine's program, or on this program, whether you communicate by telephone or whether you communicate by email, emailing requests for your favorite songs to Billy Shears, or emailing stories to one of the hosts, or most importantly, maybe a link to a story with your understanding of it, because it is your understanding that is central to this whole process. I hope I'm stating that clearly. And one more thing, just to reiterate, you contributing your understanding via yet another edition, and that is the fora at headonradionetwork.com/forum. It's live now. Our unending thanks go out to Peter Godbold, to John Fox, to Ben Birch, to Sue, ELO in the chat room, to Lottie, who's taken over moderation of the forum, to our news ninjas, Susan and Jean, to our blogger, Texas Betsy, to everyone who puts in time to make this work, to the people who go night and day at Coal River Mountain Watch, trying, struggling, fighting, day in and day out, some of the bravest people I know. David standing up against a host of Goliaths.
all of our thanks for everyone who makes this viable, and more than that, makes this a vibrant, rewarding experience. Thank you all. A happy weekend to you. We'll catch you on Monday. And don't forget Billy at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, followed by Horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner at midnight. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
America, and good morning, world. Welcome to book, chapter, and verse 130 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio exclusively right here on the listener-supported Head On Radio Network, also brought to you in part by Coal River Mountain Watch. That's crmw.net. Coal River Mountain Watch. Stop by crmw.net and have a look at what mountaintop removal is doing to the state of West Virginia. I'm so glad to be back with you this evening. Apparently, at Easter, I found something more than a basket full of eggs. I found a little case of bronchitis, and actually really knocked me for a loop. I've been pretty much sleeping for 2 days straight, So it's awfully good to be back with you. And if you can put up with my voice that switches between very low bass and some sort of a mid-range, I sound like a teenager going through puberty. But nonetheless, I am glad to be back with you this evening. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today is, in fact, Thursday, March the 27th. 2008, so if you're listening shortly after 9 p.m. Eastern Time on a Thursday that is March the 27th, 2008, you are indeed listening to a live show,
And I'll be giving you the contact numbers in just a few moments if you'd like to talk with myself and to the guest, whom I'll be introducing shortly. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com. And over at strictlyconfidentialradio.com, you'll find links to all of the guests' websites. You'll find links to the audio archives from prior shows. And you'll find links there to the chat room. The chat room is active at this very moment and is a wonderful place to hang out during any of the programming that you hear on the Head On Radio Network. Some of the smartest and most amusing people on the entire planet are located in the Head On Radio Network chat room. You'll also find that the chat room posts useful links related to what I'm talking about and what the guests are talking about.